Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, the 1st of April. It's April Fool's Day, all right. I got so much to cover. Oh, my God. Okay, yeah, this is ridiculous. I have so much to cover, folks. Obviously, just massive developments with the war in Iran. We'll get to all of those. And I mean massive. I mean, like, world-shaking, world-changing type of activity going on here. Donald Trump is apparently going to give a nationwide address prime time tonight. I don't know if that, I assume that'll happen after our show's over, but we'll keep an eye on it. And if he goes live, while we're on air, then we'll go to that. Big addresses really across the world. You've got the PM of the UK, Keir Starmer, giving a big address. Albanese, the Prime Minister of Australia, likewise gave an address having to do with the fuel lockdown that we told you to come, told you was coming. It is absolutely here now and going to get worse before it gets better. We also have the continuing fallout of Jaden Ivey being removed from the Bulls, for not being sufficiently subservient to the LGBTQ community. We're going to be joined by Royce White in the next hour. He's going to talk to us about that. Tiffany Cianci has some inside information, some exclusive secret as of now information that she'll be bringing to us about pesticides and laws being written about pesticides right now. Just a very big show. And we'll be spending a lot of the first hour on the Supreme Court decision about birthright citizenship. And it's a doozy, folks. So just so much to get into. Stay with us. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 1st of April, 2026. Trump attends Supreme Court oral arguments in a presidential first. This is just how important this decision is, and it really could determine the fate of our republic from here on out. He spent about an hour listening to the government make its case against birthright citizenship at the Supreme Court on Wednesday, making him the first sitting president to attend oral arguments at the high court. His presence would put him face-to-face with justices whom he has tried to bully and intimidate, only raises the stakes of an already closely watched case about what it means to be an American, an issue that was key to his political rise. Of course, I really actually don't know what they're talking about when they say that he's been bullying the Supreme Court. I honestly can't think of a instance of that. I can think about Chuck Schumer telling the Supreme Court that they'll sow the wind and reap the whirlwind, but that wasn't Trump. However, we will get into clips from that. The audio that's come out is truly remarkable. And folks, it ain't looking good. You got Justice Roberts being a complete moron, and basically the entire thing hinges on Amy Coney Barrett. She's sort of the wild card, could go either direction. And that doesn't bode well for the future of our country. So our fate hinges on whether a middle-aged white Catholic woman with a rainbow coalition of children can stand to be just a little bit harsh with immigrants. People say mean. It's not mean to not give somebody something that isn't theirs. So it's not actually being mean to immigrants, but she does have to, you know, moderately not give them everything they want. And the fate of America hinges on that. We'll get back to it. Meanwhile, Iran denies Trump's claim that it requested a ceasefire, calling it false and baseless. The Iranian president has just released an open letter to the people of the world. I'll read that as well today. Trump to give primetime address on Iran war as questions swirl over his next move, considering the fact that there's no guiding principle here. In other words, they keep changing what they're saying about the war every couple of hours, sometimes every like within a minute or two. While at the same time, you can't actually say, well, they're saying all this stuff, but let's look tactically at the field and see what they can and can't do, because we're acting like complete idiots whose actions are not guided by any form of logic or common sense or victory conditions. Meanwhile, top Brussels official urges Europeans to work from home and drive less. We'll talk about the fuel lockdown that is here and only going to get worse. Finally, something dark is going on. 9 top-level scientists die or go missing in the past year, mostly from America. I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's fine. Go back to sleep. We'll be right back.
I've been an oil field for as long as I've been an info warrior, 18 years. and Texan, born and raised, so I know, like, knives, like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, I mean, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm, like, horrible with equipment. I'm, like, very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows if there's a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or selling for like $40. We'll be right back.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'll tell you, I don't know if this interests you, but my day, basically, whenever I get in, usually I start, I'm never not working, right? I'm never not checking the news and compiling things and putting things in folders. But I will sit there from like noon until the show begins, and I'm just the whole time, I'm just copying links, downloading videos, just the whole time, 3 hours straight. And everything's off, like I've already bookmarked everything over the last 24 hours, and it's just a matter of going through, putting it in the document so the crew can print it, all that stuff. But it's like, if we had, you know, 12 hours to go through all of this, maybe we could make a dent. But I've got a lot to cover today, so I'm gonna try to get through Iran and the Supreme Court in this first hour. Second hour, we'll get into a lot of stuff with Royce White, but particular the, not just the firing, the releasing of Jaden Ivey from the Bulls because of his very moderate and reasonable stance about being forced to participate in LGBTQ Pride Month, but also that that's just in line with everything else that we see going on with people being punished for their just very baseline Christian beliefs. People like Karine Prejean Buller, who was kicked off of the Religious Tolerance Committee in for the White House. So we'll get into all that stuff. Then the third hour, I will be joined by Tiffany Cianci. She has some inside information. We have an exclusive as of right now, secret information about some upcoming pesticide bills in D.C. So stay tuned for that. We'll get into that in the third hour. But I could spend 12 hours just on, well, it's almost like we have to cover the updates of Iran in real time because things are changing so much, so rapidly, and with so little warning or seeming through line that combines it all. I literally have 40 videos of this. Just having to do just with the Middle East and Iran. So where do we begin? We can begin with just kind of the absurdity of every claim that Trump makes. There's an article yesterday that was like the 12 times Trump has declared victory. So yeah, we'll start with this. We'll start with the footage of striking Tel Aviv as apparently last night was the biggest attack on Israel yet out of Iran. Which is interesting, because if we want to go to clip 38 here, this is what Trump said earlier today. Let's watch.
And when I read the fake New York Times, you take a look at it, it's like, oh, they're putting up a good fight. They're not putting up a fight. They're not even shooting at it.
Not even shooting at us, which is interesting, because clip 35 looks an awful lot like Iran shooting at somebody who looks an awful lot like us. And, this is just one of the many videos that went absolutely viral yesterday that seems to show that Iran can, in fact, continue to fire and are. And it appears as though Israel is taking the brunt of this as well. Again, we've just got that we're in this, like, laundry cycle revolution series where it's just Trump comes out, says something about Iran being willing to negotiate. And then about an hour later, you have Ron come out and going, that's just not true. I don't know who told him that, but we're not negotiating. And then just rinse and repeat. You just do that over and over. In the meantime, between declaring victory and declaring, you know, Iran is, you know, totally destroyed, Iran is bombing the hell out of Israel and American bases and their Gulf neighbors. And Trump is routinely claiming that it's only going to get bigger and crazier and We're about to hit them really hard. You just wait. So again, kind of nothing to hang our hat on in any way whatsoever. In any way you're looking at it. Let's go to clip 27 here. So again, we just heard from Trump that they've totally defeated Iran. They don't even have BB guns anymore. They're knocked out. Now it's just a matter of mopping up the mess. But that's not true. Let's go to clip 27.
An Iranian strike deep in the heart of Tel Aviv. For the fifth straight day, the skies above the city lit up as Israel's air defense system intercepted one Iranian missile after another.
So apparently the missile interceptors are still working fairly well. But those are going to run out not too distant future, and Iran doesn't seem to be slowing down whatsoever. Israel under largest Iranian assault in weeks as missile salvo hits center. Israel is facing the largest continual Iranian assault since hostilities escalated 3 weeks ago, Channel 14 reported, marking a sharp escalation in the U.S.-Israel-Iran conflict. Iran launched its largest missile salvo, sirens sounding across central Israel as the missiles were detected, with explosions heard in Tel Aviv and surrounding areas, including Jerusalem and the Shepherd area. One missile reportedly carried a cluster warhead, dispersing bomblets over a wide area. Damage was reported in homes and vehicles in Rosh Hayin and Petah Tikva, while a bomblet also struck a playground in Petah Tikva. So again, they are still getting hit, and it looks like the ground invasion is still very much on the table. You've got the Telegraph speculating, is Trump planning a ground invasion of Iran on Good Friday? The president has suggested he could walk away from Iran and leave other nations to police the Strait of Hormuz, threatening that America, quote, won't be there to help you anymore. Traditional allies of the U.S. told one day that he does not need them, another day taunted as cowards, and then told they should hurry up and go to the Strait, are wondering how best to respond or whether Trump is playing a different game altogether. Ever since the start of the conflict, Trump has been sending out a blizzard of conflicting messages. The war is won. It's not a war, but an excursion. Iran has 10 more days to stop the fighting and make a deal. Companies should show some guts. Other countries should show some guts. Iran should open up the straits, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, when he said that the war could last 4 to 6 weeks, he meant it, at least for the initial phase of reducing Iran's ability to repel a raid, to retrieve its enriched uranium and take strategic islands in the Gulf. Now, it does appear as though the ground invasion is certainly on the table, certainly moving in that direction. In fact, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it may be happening right now. For all we know, this could be very well be what the announcement tonight from Trump is about, or he could wait till Good Friday and wait till the markets close. That also tends to be his strategy. But let's go to clip 28 here, just to set the table, just to lay it out. The great Michael Savage. Oh, it's Passover. It's a Jewish holiday, so get ready for war. They do tend to like doing that sort of stuff. So Michael Savage has come out strongly against the war in Iran. I want to go to that for a minute. Apparently it's his 84th birthday today, so happy birthday to Michael Savage. And he came out saying what everybody who's not an Israeli shill recognizes fully at this point. Let's go to clip 28. This is Michael Savage.
Bad one. We can be anything we want to be. So just try to be the good one and the wise one. And let us all pray for peace. Nobody wanted this war. Everybody wants this war to end as quickly as possible. Anyone with a conscience knows this war makes no sense. Nobody's buying the big lie. That's not to say Iran is a good nation. We know the mullahs are crazy and they live in the 7th century. But maybe war isn't the answer. I've heard the other side of it. We all saw The Godfather. Sorry, I have very bad allergies. We all saw The Godfather. When Fat Clemenza takes Michael down in the basement in that house in Brooklyn or Staten Island, wherever it was, and they're shooting the gun. And Fat Clemenza, as it was written, says, we should have stopped Hitler at Munich. Remember that line? Puzo was a great writer. unless Coppola wrote it into the screenplay. I don't know. Great line. He says, see, Mike, we should have stopped Hitler at Munich. Then we would have avoided World War II. So there is a thought in this land that we should stop the mullahs now before they grow too strong and they can't be stopped. I can understand that, but I don't buy it. A year ago, we were told their nuclear capacity was completely destroyed. And now they've been bombed for a couple of weeks. What's left for them to fight with? Well, they have missiles. They could put a nuclear tip on one of them. I suppose they could get it from China or Russia. Do you think by bombing them, they're going to stop? We're liable to drag China and Russia into the war. Do you ever think about that? What is to prevent Russia from...
That's a great Michael Savage saying, just what a lot of people are recognizing right now. However, something has changed here. Something has broken a little bit. And just a quick rundown from Uncommon Sense at Uncommon Sense 76 on X. Lindsey Graham now says that we should make a deal. Remember, he had a deep and informed conversation with Mickey and Minnie Mouse, and they convinced him that Iran is not the right military target. We could go on about that, but something happened. Again, we don't know what sort of magical intervention his fairy godmother implemented, but Lindsey Graham now says make a deal. Trump says to make a deal. Mark Levin is saying the war could end in a few weeks. Netanyahu is saying Iran is, quote, no longer a threat to Israel. At least he says they're not an existential threat. Europe is flipping on Zionism, in as is East Asia. Marco Rubio outlined changes strategic objectives to not include the opening of the strait or regime change. Trump discusses leaving Iran even without a deal. Bill Ackman says to buy stocks and that there will be peace. America is questioning their Jewish overlords, and Trump is less popular than ever, and no one wants boots on the ground. China and Russia are emboldened with sanctions removed. There's been a pivot, if I had to guess. The U.S. is staring down all of its options, and it doesn't like them. Either that or it's cover for a ground invasion with the 2,500 to 10,000 possible troops in the region. It's actually upwards of 50,000. Even so, what would that actually accomplish? If you want to physically take Iran, they would need 500,000 to 1 million troops. If you send 500,000 troops, you may get slaughtered. Public opinion would be even worse. Well, before, I've only ever seen calls for escalation. Everything now points to the U.S. trying to get out of a bad situation and trying to get out fast. And he's right. I mean, something has changed here. But that could just be the language being used has changed, and that everything is actually lining up to become the quagmire that we always expected. This is from Apollo Russo underscore on X, and I thought this was a very interesting and informed breakdown. Isfahan underground tunnel complex. So basically, the Spectator Index says the Pentagon is developing military options for a final blow in Iran that could include the use of ground forces and massive bombing campaign, according to an Axios report. So this was from March 26th. And then this is the analysis from Apollo. Isfahan underground tunnel complex. The strike sequencing over the last month reads like a corridor preparation. First, the southern coastal defenses, the belt facing the Persian Gulf, was hit. Manab, Bandar Abbas, Konarak. Then Iranian naval capabilities across the Gulf of Oman was gutted. Then missile infrastructure and mobile TELs were systematically reduced. Then internal security nodes across dozens of cities were hit, including Isfahan. This is the sequencing of an approach route being cleared layer by layer toward a terminal objective. And the obvious terminal objective is the Isfahan underground tunnel complex. 440 plus kilograms of uranium enriched to 60% stored inside, enough for roughly 11 nuclear weapons, weeks away from weapons grade 90%. The tunnels have no ventilation shaft openings, no structural weak points for penetrating munitions. Someone has to physically go in those tunnels. Every other option has been tried and failed. It's been exhausted. So that makes sense to me. If this is all about the nuclear enrichment, then that would be the target we'd be going for. And obviously, they are hardened against any form of weaponry we have from the air. We'd have to send men on the ground, and you could potentially do something like that, theoretically, feasibly, with a fairly small force, considering the fact that you're not actually trying to take over and occupy the whole nation, just a Maduro-style in-and-out operation. And it seems like they're preparing the corridor in preparation for that. And there's basically endless, you know, reports and people noticing that everything is moving that direction. All of the naval forces, all of the Marine forces, all of the Air Force, the specific planes like the A-10 Warthog, which is specifically designed and utilized for infantry support. It all points to a ground invasion being imminent. And I think that is fairly accurate. It gets a little complicated, though. We can go to clip number 34 here. This is Senator Chris Coons, who I believe is a Democrat, if I'm not mistaken. But I should have liked so many other times in our history. Yeah, when the Republicans do something stupid, it turns out it gives a chance for the Democrats to win victories that they don't deserve. Let's go to clip 34 here. This is Chris Coons about what American Israel's intentions in all of this are.
That's a great question to which there isn't a great answer. President Trump, several days into the war, made it clear that he had thought that Larijani, one of the senior elected leaders of the Iranian government, was someone with whom he or his administration might have negotiated, but the Israelis assassinated him. The Israelis have attacked over and over the senior leadership of the intelligence services, of the IRGC, of the Ayatollah and his close advisors, and that has made it difficult for us to assess exactly who's in charge. But we do know this. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard, the IRGC, has a pretty firm grip on the country and has been trained in how to continue aggressive operations even when there isn't a clear central command. So I don't, in the near term, see an easy path towards there being a real change in the government or the regime in Iran.
And we've sort of given up on that anyway. I mean, we're still saying it, but we know what the answer is. We know what they want to create. They want to create a situation in which Iran is a broken state that we routinely bomb every couple of months. Nobody in America wants that, but that's the way Israel has operated with its neighbors forever. And it's really how they want to operate around the world, more or less, when you really get right down to it. But let's go to clip 17 here. But hold on, sorry. That video we just saw was Chris Coons, the senator who has access to the classified briefings, saying absolutely, and not in a speculative way, that we were hoping to work with Larijani or whatever his name is, but that, you know, less hardliner, he was going to be the one who we were going to prop up once we assassinated all the leaders. And then Israel assassinated him. And he says they routinely assassinate anybody that we want to work with. So once again, Israel got us into this war. The pressures of Israel set up the conditions for this war. And now our exit ramps for this war are being systematically eliminated by Israel on purpose to keep us in the war. They're the ones we should be at war with. I mean, they are at war with us just through Iran, essentially. That's how this is working. So that's important to note with Senator Chris Coons coming out and saying that verbatim. Let's go to clip 17 here. This is a former U.S. Naval Intelligence officer talking about the immense troop buildup that hints that, yes, the ground troops in Iran are very much still on the table. Let's watch.
Even though the war looks like it's happening in a massive aerial campaign, we've noticed just over the last 2 weeks, about 2 weeks ago, a series of flights started to move from the United States, which started to spell out that there was a much bigger picture going on. We started seeing flights that were at the main bases of the 1st and 2nd Ranger Regiments, large numbers of aircraft, enough to move the entire battalion. Special Operations Command, Tampa, Florida's Special Operations Headquarters, SEAL Team 6's headquarters, and then an associated U.S. Air Force unit that is only used to take contingency flights to repair damaged runways. This massive armada moved quietly to an air base in Israel, over to air base in Israel, and an air base in Jordan. The numbers that they are having there are far bigger than anything you would need for Karg Island. I was in the Navy. I served off Karg Island, had naval battles with the Iranians in the 1980s, hit mines. Let me tell you, Karg and the southern Strait of Hormuz Islands are a task in themselves. The Marines could handle that. But that combined with the 82nd Airborne, we are looking at something much, much bigger than taking those islands.
So again, we also are just moving our third aircraft carrier to the region. All of these signs pointing towards an actual invasion of Iran on with ground forces. That's what the rumors are as well. As you just heard, that's what, I mean, they're moving in that direction. You also have this from the Inside Paper. Military officials are planning for two potential ground assaults in Iran, one on Karg Island, the hub of the country's energy industry, and the other to seize enriched uranium to hobble Iran's nuclear development program, according to three people familiar with the matter. All they need is the go-ahead from President Trump. So again, that all falls in line with everything else that we've been looking at today. However, this could quickly become a world war. U.S. aims to be unpredictable with putting boots on the ground. Like, yeah, I guess. Fine. Chechen fighters are ready to deploy to Iran. Chechen units loyal to Kadyrov said they're ready to deploy to Iran if U.S. ground invasion begins. Forces describe the conflict as a religious war and potential intervention as jihad against U.S.-led aggression. Iran raises alarms over Ukrainian involvement, warning of widening geopolitical dimensions of the ongoing war, with Chechen military units announcing their readiness to deploy to Iran to support the country's armed forces in the case of a U.S. ground invasion. So this would be sort of a separatist militia that would be getting involved, or it could go with the blessing, the official blessing of the Russian government. Regardless, it looks like, you know, the dominoes are being set up for full-fledged World War III. Now, I want to go to clip number 13 here. This is the reality about what the war in Iran has become at this point, as we have successfully hit all of the military installations that we know about, and yet we're still getting hit with missiles. So what do you hit next? Go to clip 13.
You know, one thing that really struck me today when I heard the chairman briefing, General Kane, was that, you know, the increase in what they call dynamic targeting, meaning that they have the ability to retask aircraft after they've launched based on actionable intelligence. So what that informed me with is the fact that I think a lot of the principal targeting going after the weapon development industrial base, whether that's drones or ballistic missiles, and even the nuclear research and development centers, and certainly all the command and control, the major ones across the country, have been effectively either destroyed or degraded. So it sounds like, based on what we heard today, what I read and what was inferred is that absent of going after this national infrastructure that you just mentioned, the water, the electricity and the oil infrastructure, a lot of this significant targeting, minus what's buried very deep underground, has been eliminated.
So, yeah, that's basically us admitting that we've eliminated the military infrastructure we can reach, and so we're still getting hit. So now we're just resorting to exclusively bombing just basic critical infrastructure for Iran, which, of course, is a war crime many times over, strategically retarded. It's actually only going to backlash since people that maybe didn't even like the Iranian government certainly are going to like you less when you blow up their children in a school. So we're not doing this. So like it's the same. You can ask the same question of like, well, why did Israel kill the person that we expected to take over? And if you're in the mindset of like, but don't they want this war to go our way? Aren't we trying to win this conflict for America? It's like, yeah, that decision doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at all. If you have somebody that you're ready to prop up as the puppet leader, why would you kill them? No, that doesn't make any sense. No, there must be some sort of alternative, ulterior motive at play here. And this is exactly the same. Why would you bomb critical infrastructure? If you know that they're only going to bomb your critical infrastructure, it's only going to get worse. You're only going to piss them off and, you know, more entrench the leadership. If they were actually trying to defeat Iran, they wouldn't even do this. They're doing it because the purpose is to create endless war. We'll get back into this on the other side. So a lot more to get into with Iran.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it. I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62, that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate-level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, And sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this. That's where they put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells. The methylene blue and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvishowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Something happened on X where they started cross-posting Japanese posts with American posts and inspired me to go back to 2019, do a little highlight and video of my time in Japan. Probably the best 2 weeks of my life. It was freaking amazing. I love Japan. It was a great place. And I'd love to live there. I think it would be a great place to live. You know what I would never do? You know what I would never do to the Japanese people whom I respect and admire? I would never break into their country and live there against their will and then file a court case when they try to tell me to go home. Because I'm a decent person that actually appreciates Japan and would want to contribute to it, not be a parasite and a burden. I don't know why we don't get that level of respect from anybody else around the world, but it's not too much to ask. And yet, it's constantly withheld from us, that just basic respect, basic appreciation of the desires and the will of the American people. You would think, if anybody, you would think they'd be welcoming me with open arms. Guess what? They don't have to. And I respect that because I like them. And anybody that doesn't respect that doesn't like us and doesn't belong here. So I thought I'd play that a little bit. Thought I actually did a pretty good job while also not using a single image that showed my wife's face. It was difficult. Would have been a lot better if I could have shown her face. But again, this is the basics of the conflict here in America, is that for some reason, we just allow ourselves to be disrespected, allow ourselves to be taken advantage of. We allow people who don't like us, don't want to contribute to us, literally just see us as a giant bunch of suckers to scam to the nth degree, and they want to come here to scam us and then send all their money back home. Why would we ever allow this? And this is the thing. Right now, the Supreme Court is debating birthright citizenship. Birthright citizenship is absurd. It's absurd on the face of it. It may have had a role to play back in the 1800s when it was first implemented. And this is why this whole thing is nonsensical, is because these arguments, I get how the law works. I understand why we do things this way. It seems like a vestigial, like, holdover of an earlier time where maybe this would have made sense. But right now, it's like, the question is simple to me. Should somebody be allowed to enter our country, plop out a baby, and they are therefore American? The answer should be absolutely not. What the hell are you talking about? That's ridiculous. Of course not. How would that even work? Are you crazy? There are just 7 billion people that can get here in a plane flight. They can all just stop over for an afternoon, have a baby at our expense, and then that baby can just collect Social Security, vote in our elections. I mean, this is absurd, right? But you can't just look at a problem as it exists right now and provide a solution for it. You can't even, we aren't even writing laws to actually match the world as it exists right now. We're going to the Supreme Court to decide on a case based on precedent from over 100 years ago. So the entire Supreme Court argument are like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like we're arguing about laws that were made to deal with laws that don't exist anymore. Okay, so here's the thing. In the 1800s, there was naturalization in America was exclusively available for white Europeans. That was the only people that could be naturalized as citizens. So the case they're talking about in the Supreme Court today, or at least they make reference to these cases, is like, okay, but you have a Chinese guy that comes over here and is, for all intents and purposes, a citizen. He's lived here his whole life. He's moved his whole family over here. He's made himself an American in every way he possibly can, except for, you know, blood and race. But our Constitution, as it existed then, didn't have provisions for a Chinese guy to become American. It just didn't exist. And so they wrote this law in the 14th Amendment to be, or, you know, at least part of it was about this idea of like, all right, well, you can't naturalize him because he's not white. So, but if he lives here and this is his domicile, then maybe we can make a provision for him. And so it's like the whole reason the 14th Amendment exists is to deal with people that are excluded by a naturalization law exclusive to Europeans that doesn't exist anymore. So we got rid of the naturalization law that meant the 14th Amendment was necessary, but we still have the 14th Amendment, even though that law doesn't exist anymore. This is the type of stuff that it's like, what are we doing? And like half of the conversation is them debating on the definition of words as understood by people in the 1800s. Again, I understand that it's like, okay, you set precedent and then you have to interpret the law. And as time changes, you have to go back and say, okay, does this word still mean the thing that it used to mean? If not, how do we update it? I understand. But it just seems ridiculous to me. It just seems, I mean, in fact, it is ridiculous. What should have happened a long time ago is that the 14th Amendment should have been eradicated and there should be a new law by Congress. Congress should write a new law that just says, hey, guys, to be an American citizen, one of your parents has to be an American citizen. That's the law, problem solved. That would be it. With no more discussion, no more conversation, no more debating, no more getting out a dictionary from 1806 to determine what exactly they meant by allegiance. Like, what if you just wrote a law in Congress that said, the 14th Amendment is no longer applicable. We're not going to do it anymore. We don't need it. It's not, it literally is not necessary. It doesn't comport itself with the modern world. So we have to get rid of it. We have to change it. Instead, we're trying to go back in time and ascertain what the people who wrote it thought, even though obviously the world and its conditions as it exists now, if they could have foreseen what was to come, they didn't want any of this stuff to happen. They wouldn't be okay with any of this. I mean, the you know, really amazing example that's come out over the last couple of weeks is this island in Guam where you have thousands of Chinese moms giving birth to quote-unquote American babies. You tell me, like, just tell me if you can figure out the answer to this question. If you were to go back to 1868, when Chinese people were still slave workers building railroads in the Midwest, and ask the people who wrote the 14th Amendment, is the thing that you're writing right now, does it mean that if a Chinese woman goes to an island on Guam and then back in China, that baby is American? Do you really, like, is there any question that those people would be like, well, it's a complicated issue. I understand that. It's like, they'd be like, what? No. What is Guam? What are you talking about? Absolutely not. Is that what people think that we're writing? We need to really be more explicit here. Like, and that's another part of it. I think also genuinely the people in the past, they wrote things with the assumption that, like, the character of the nation would continue. And this is one of the, I don't know, misfires of Thomas Jefferson. See, Thomas Jefferson thought that the morals and the construct, or what, that the people would stay the same. Sorry. It's a little confusing. I'm messing it up. Thomas Jefferson basically said that, like, every 20 years there would have to be a new government, because they understood that they were trying to make a government that would have to change and operate in time with emerging technology and emerging just the modern world. They knew that, like, they couldn't write something that could go unchanged, right? It would have to change, and it might have to change completely. Like, Thomas Jefferson straight up thought, like, yeah, maybe in 20 years we just destroy the Constitution and start over with something new. They thought that the mode of government and the function of government would change, but that the people would stay the same, more or less, and just have to change government to fit with the modern times. The opposite has happened. We have sort of calcified our government structure into a form that just does not make sense anymore, while the world and everybody in America has changed entirely and, like, doesn't even have a theory of mind for what the founders were like how they thought and what their opinions were on things. And so, you know, in the 1860s, when the 14th Amendment was being written, you know, they wrote it just not thinking that they would have to explain these things. Like, they could not have guessed that there would be these subversive infiltrators 200 years later that would be twisting their words beyond recognition. They wrote it in, what's the phrase? It's like, good effort. You know, we need a revolution every 20 years just to keep the government honest. Like, that's what Thomas Jefferson thought. And yet the government that he created is still operating 250 years later. It wasn't supposed to, guys. We were supposed to change this. We should change this. This doesn't make any sense, especially when you have people like Ketanji Brown Jackson making an absolute fool of herself. And I have a series of clips. I clipped them out myself, so it's not just stuff downloaded from the internet. And it's a series, and it's basically one chunk, but I cut it up into four pieces, because each time it's Ketanji Brown Jackson bringing something up. And this is the thing. From Ketanji Brown Jackson's point of view, she's going into the record. She's going into the debates that happened, because we have the records of the debates, exactly what was said. There's no we don't need to speculate about if these people thought that they were writing a law to allow 10 million Mexicans to have free citizenship as long as they break our laws first. Like, this is ridiculous. But she's going back, and she's not looking at it in good faith. That was the term I was looking for. She's not looking at it in good faith and going, I want to figure out what they really meant here. She's looking for little isolated, out of context phrases that she can dislocate from the rest of the conversation and use to build her, you know, straw man argument. It's like, is this what a Supreme Court justice is supposed to do? Instead of just, like, actually genuinely trying to understand what the people who were writing it actually meant so you can best enforce the law, she's literally just, like, she knows that it's not the law, that the way she interprets it is not the way they interpreted it. And so she's deliberately misconstruing statements from the debate. And so this is a series where she brings something up, the lawyer for the government arguing against birthright citizenship just smacks her down, like, so perfectly. It's insane. And it's very funny because she interrupts him every time. Every time she's like, well, what about this? And he's like, yeah, that actually is in our favor. That's actually arguing for us. And you see, and she's like, well, okay, well, that may be so, but what about this over here? And he's like, yeah, that also is evidence of our argument is right. She's like, well, okay, well, that may be, let's not talk about that anymore. Let's move on to this next thing. Like, it's so embarrassing. I would think if these people had shame, they would be so embarrassed, but they don't. So we'll just have to talk about it and mock them regardless of how they feel. Let's go to clip 53 first. So this is Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson asking about the debate in 1868 and being told by the lawyer for the government, yeah, you are completely misinterpreting that. This entirely goes towards our argument, not yours. But and then she interrupts him and cuts him off. Let's watch.
But if the Supreme Court had, prior to the 14th Amendment, established that allegiance meant the common law definition, I think your first hurdle is to help us understand why we would believe that when the 14th Amendment was ratified, the framers weren't just incorporating what we had previously said it meant.
Page 572 of the Congressional Record directly addresses this. They say the concept of temporary and local allegiance from the Schooner Exchange is what is meant by, or temporary and local jurisdiction from the Schooner Exchange is what is meant by the word jurisdiction in the 14th Amendment. Senator Trumbull says, I thought about saying owing allegiance, but again, quote, there's a sort of allegiance from persons temporarily resident in the United States whom we have no right to make citizens. So he expressly and consciously.
Okay, well.
She's like, well, what about this? He's like, this person expressly and deliberately says you're wrong. She's like, okay, we'll move on to the next point here. And this happens four times in a row, just like this. Okay. So let's go to the next one. I got to figure out which one the next one here is. The argument supports us. Yeah. So this is the one where, again, she tries to bring something up that she has cherry picked and isolated and said, well, if you take this out of context and read it through a modern lens, then it kind of seems like the guys that wrote this might be on our side. And the guy's like, no. If you take it in context, they literally debate the point that Ketanji Brown Jackson is making and decide that she's wrong back in 1868. And she should know this because she read it, but she's deliberately ignoring or being deliberately ignorant of the reality of the conversation that was happening and claiming that, you know, trying to take something out of context to frame it as if the framers of the 14th Amendment actually considered this. Like, she's just lying, and she again gets totally smacked down. Clip 54.
I mean, that's a debate, and it's a discussion, very valid, but then we have a subsequent debate.
Sorry, I got to pause it there. Because, again, all these clips are one after another, right? So the last clip that you just heard that just ended, when he's like, this expressly says that you're wrong. She's like, but that's a debate. Okay, we can have that debate later. It's not a debate, lady. So sorry, I think it's funny that she's just perfectly diametrically wrong, proven wrong. And she's like, well, that's a debate. It's not a debate. Sorry. Back to the idiot.
I mean, that's a debate, and it's a discussion, very valid. But then we have a subsequent debate between Fessenden and Wade, where the same concept comes up, and it becomes clear, at least from Senator Wade's perspective, that that's wrong. So Fessenden, and I'm not sure whether these are senators, I apologize. Fessenden says, suppose a person is born here of parents from abroad temporarily in this country. Wade responds, the senator says a person may be born here and not be a citizen. I know that is so in one instance, in the case of the children of foreign ministers who reside near the United States, et cetera, et cetera. So it appears as though in that exchange, at least Senator Wade believed that the English common law understanding of what it means to have allegiance, to be a temporary person on the soil, was what was being adopted.
Yeah, that exchange strongly supports us. If you look at it in context, Senator Wade has introduced a version that says only birth on U.S. soil and doesn't have any allegiance or jurisdictional element to it. And so Senator Fessenden stands up and says, well, that can't be right because, you know, obviously, what about the children of temporary visitors? It has this, you know, it's another one of these statements that has this appeal to a background understanding that we all agree that the temporary visitors, their children do not become citizens. And then Senator Wade has to kind of backtrack and say, well, what are the children of ambassadors? And in the end, Congress does not adopt Senator Wade's proposal. So we think that to extent you can draw an inference from that, the inference strongly supports.
All right.
Okay, all right, all right. So I was totally wrong about that, and it actually supports your argument. Okay, well, that's interesting. Yeah, duh. So again, she's making a point, taking one sentence or whatever out of a debate, you know, one exchange, and it's like, yeah, but that exchange ended with them making the conclusion that you're wrong. And basically, it's like originally they were debating, should it just be anybody born here? And they're like, no, that's ridiculous, because what if you have an invading army? Are all of their kids citizens? That's ridiculous. What if you have an ambassador that's just visiting here, their kid's not going to be a citizen, a temporary visitor, somebody just passing through, they're not going to get us. So it has to be more than just having been born here. They have to be permanent residents here. They have to domicile here, meaning it's their permanent home. They have no plans on leaving. And that's where Ketanji Brown Jackson gets really confused and starts debating whether or not babies can have allegiances. Again, this is like, go back to 1868. And when they're sitting there, you know, in their smoke-filled rooms and their tuxedos and their top hats and beards, and they're going, you know, well, clearly if it's somebody with an allegiance to another country, if you were to go back and be like, is it the baby's allegiance? Like what? Do we need to write? No, babies don't have allegiances. Like, what are you talking about? How could this possibly have been what they intended? It's the millennial woes, retweeted text that people post all the time. They just pretend to be stupid. They pretend not to understand. This is obvious. It's not the baby's allegiance that's at question. It's the parents' allegiance that's at question. So this was the next question, Ketanji Brown Jackson. That's two in a row. Two things she brings up that just get immediately smacked down with the primary sources by the government. She does. All right, well, we'll move on to the next part. Do babies have allegiances? And it's like, okay, great. Supreme Court of the United States. Let's watch clip number 55.
Well, let me just ask you about why we wouldn't see in the 14th Amendment anything about parental allegiance. Several of my colleagues have talked about the fact that your view of this turns on what the status of the parents are, and not the child, as would the born in the United States view of it. Can you help us understand why we wouldn't expect to see a mention of parents in the text of this amendment?
I think it's well understood that, for example, children cannot, newborns cannot form domicile. So it follows every 19th century.
That assumes domicile is in the test. And I'm asking you, how do we know that Congress did adopt the test that you say it adopted?
When you're looking at 19th century conceptions of allegiance, the notion that the allegiance, again, you say domicile is instantiating the concept of allegiance for aliens as opposed to citizen. All of that, the 19th century understands the newborn's domicile, its allegiance follows the allegiance of the parents. And I point out that their theory relies on parental allegiance as well, because they recognize the exceptions for, hostile invading armies, for tribal Indians, for ambassadors. Again, the child's allegiance status, even on their view, turns on the status of the parent.
Yeah, yeah, okay, all right. Babies don't have allegiances. I'm keeping up with you there. The hell are you talking about? What are you talking about? And like, this gets absurd. Amy Comey Barrett asked a question, what happens if we don't know who the kid's parents are? It's like, I don't know. How is that even possible? You know that they were born in the United States, but you don't know who their mother is? How could that even occur? Are you trying to write a law that can somehow also contain within it potentialities that literally cannot exist? Like, why would the law need to say that if we don't know who the parents are? Tell you what. If ever there is a baby born for which we don't even know who their parents are, but they're born in America and we see them being born somehow without knowing who their parents, tell you what, in that case, yeah, sure, that kid can be a citizen. I'm willing to make that little caveat there, just in case there's any sort of spontaneous manifestation of babies, they get to be American citizens. There's some sort of beyond miraculous conception, miraculous delivery with no mother. It's, yeah, okay, that the miracle baby gets to be American. I'm okay with that. Why are we talking about this? What the hell are we doing? How is this United States of America in the year 2026? Let's go to the next one. Let's go to, again, she can't understand it. She it's deliberately misunderstanding, being deliberately ignorant, and it's so infuriating that this is the way that our, the future of our republic is being litigated. Let's watch.
We're supposed to do this. Don't worry about the people who are already here and who would not qualify under your rule. How does this work? Are you suggesting that when a baby is born, people have to have documents, present documents? Is this happening in the delivery room? How are we determining when or whether a newborn child is a citizen of the United States under your rule?
And I think that's directly addressed in the SSA guidance that's cited in our brief. What SSA says is there's currently a system where, for example, social security numbers are generated based on the birth certificate. They say this can still be, for the vast majority of instances, completely transparent. You will still get a...
transparent. I'm just talking about the particulars, because now you say your rule turns on whether the person intended to stay in the United States. And I think Justice Barrett brought this up. So are we bringing pregnant women in for depositions? What are we doing to figure this out?
No, as I pointed out earlier, the executive order turns on lawfulness of status. So if you give birth to a baby in the hospital right now, it gets the birth certificate in the system. There's a computer system.
So there's no opportunity. There's apparently no opportunity then for the person to prove or to say that they actually intended to stay in the United States.
Absolutely not. The opposite is true. Their opportunity to dispute if they think they were wrongly denied, which would only happen in a tiny minority of cases,
after the
is
fact.
Directly addressing that guidance.
After the fact.
Yes.
After their baby has been denied citizenship, then we can go through the process.
Yes. And the way that, I mean, I'm summarizing because I'm not an expert in computers, but there's a computer program that currently automatically generates a social security number. SSA says, look, a social security number, non-citizens can have them if they work authorization, so it doesn't prove citizenship. We'll give you a social security number, provided that there's the system automatically checks the immigration status of the parents, which there are robust databases for, and then it appears no different to the vast majority of birthing parents.
So again, I genuinely don't even understand what she was asking. What? She's like, oh, so we're going to be deposing pregnant women? What are you talking about? If they're a legal citizen here to stay because they're on a permanent visa, then they're domiciled here. Like, this is not complicated. They're literally creating non-existent circumstances to try to come up with a reason to oppose this. This whole thing is absurd. This shouldn't even be at the Supreme Court. If they actually decide, in favor of birthright citizenship, that's basically it for the country. I'll show you one more clip on the other side in the first 5 minute small segment that really shows you how broken and lost and in need of replacement our system is. And then Royce White joins me to talk about the anti-Christ activity.
In a world where globalist, depopulationist principalities and powers of the air have been adding, spraying, and inundating humans with heavy metals, chemicals, and toxins, TheAlexJonesStore.com would like to introduce a new way to remove them from your body from the inside out. Introducing zeolite. Zeolites are a group of crystal-like porous minerals that are found where molten stone meets water. From the Greek zeo, to boil, and lithos, or light, meaning stone, this unique network of tiny little holes and channels found in zeolite absorb and remove harmful substances like heavy metals, chemicals, and other toxins. So don't delay. Start the process of removing unwanted toxins from your body and put some skin in the game of the info war today by going to TheAlexJonesStore.com and picking up a bottle of zeolite.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at @RealAlexJones and at @AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I will be joined very shortly by Royce White. I just want to go to one more clip of the Supreme Court discussion that occurred today about birthright citizenship. And this just shows you how not fit for purpose our current system is. It is literally incapable of changing for the modern age, and it's going to destroy us if we don't, you know, figure this out and figure out a way to deal with this. Again, the proper way to deal with this would be for the Congress to actually go in and rewrite the 14th Amendment, abolish the 14th Amendment, write a new one just saying we're not doing birthright citizenship anymore. That's ridiculous. That was maybe fit for the 1860s, but we're in 2026, and it just genuinely doesn't make it. No other country in the world has this. So again, it's like, it's not like we're like, well, we got to figure out how to do that. How do we even do it if we're not doing birthright citizenship? It's like, well, why don't we just do what every other country in the world does? How about that for a start? Not that complicated, but we got to go to the Supreme, go through the Supreme Court, which I don't even understand anyway. So many of our problems have come from Congress and the Senate just giving up their power. In fact, I've got a video today of Speaker of the House of Congress, Mike Johnson, saying, well, Trump says it's not a war. He says it's a, you know, military operation. So, you know, we don't really have anything to say about it. We only come into effect when it's a war declaration. It's like, so you're giving up. You're surrendering your right to have a say over whether America goes to war. This isn't a matter of, you know, checks and balances. This is, you are abandoning your role as the check and balance. You are surrendering your prerogative to the executive. And the same thing happens with the Supreme Court. They, instead of writing laws, you know, allow the Supreme Court to basically write law from the bench. And even that is a little bit confusing because the Supreme Court will come out with decisions and then the liberals just ignore it. And it looks like it doesn't matter. I mean, they come out with a decision about, you know, you're not allowed to do DEI or affirmative action. And the colleges just openly say, we're still doing it. We're just calling it something different. And that's just allowed, apparently. It's a Supreme Court decision. They're violating it. Nothing happens. Happened again today. A judge blocked the Trump administration from terminating Biden-granted parole status for up to 900,000 immigrants. The Supreme Court decided that these little judges could not issue nationwide injunctions. But they do. They just keep doing it. So it's almost like, okay, even if the Supreme Court says that birthright citizenship is no longer legal, will the left even change their, I mean, they'll just keep giving out citizenship to whoever's here. They'll just act like it never happened. So this whole thing is broken. Let's go to clip 51. This is just how broken it is.
Based on Chinese media reports, there are 500 birth tourism companies in the People's Republic of China whose business is to bring people here to give birth and return to that nation.
Having said all that, you do agree that that has no impact on the legal analysis before us?
I think it's, I quote what Justice Scalia said in his Hamdan dissent where they have, where it, like their interpretation has these implications that could not possibly have been approved by the 19th century framers of this amendment. I think that, shows that they've made a mess, their interpretation has made a mess of the provision.
Well, it certainly wasn't a problem in the 19th century.
No, but of course, we're in a new world now, as Justice Alito pointed out to, where 8 billion people are one plane ride away from having a child who's a U.S. citizen.
Well, it's a new world. It's the same Constitution.
It is, and as Justice Scalia said, I think in the case that Justice Alito was referring to, you've got a constitutional provision that addresses certain evils, and it should be extended to reasonably comparable evils. He said that about statutory interpretation. I think the same principle applies here, and I think we quote that in our brief.
Thank you, Justice.
Again, it's just like deliberate ignorance or something. I don't know how exactly to phrase it, but that phrase, it's a new world, but the same constitution. Yeah, that's a problem. That's like a really big problem. If these things that are occurring now were not foreseen by the people that wrote the laws, then you've got to change the law to fit with the modern reality. What the hell are you talking about? This is a problem. I mean, the Constitution is the greatest, you know, document ever written, but it's supposed to be updated. The point of the Constitution is it's supposed to be routinely updated to deal with a new situation. Robert seems not to think so. So 8 billion people, one plane ride away. Rob was just like, well, some guys wrote a law in 1868, so I guess they're all Americans.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive. The two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on The War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You know, the phenomenon of prepping seems to go through like highs and lows. And it feels like I remember back when Obama was president, prepping was like the big thing. There were reality shows about it. Everybody was storing food and stuff. Because I think nobody had hope that it was ever going to get any better. Then Trump got elected, and I feel like prepping kind of like fell, you know, wasn't as culturally relevant anymore. But now we're on the cusp of World War III, nuclear exchange, total destruction, fuel rationing already taking place all over the world. And people are starting to get prepared again. Well, the best way to get prepared is to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Get yourself an Alex Jones signature Faraday bag bundle. The bag itself is well worth the full price in order to keep your electronics safe and avoid the electromagnetic waves that may result from a high-altitude nuclear explosion. But it also comes jam-packed full of other great goodies like the tactical trench knife, the America First t-shirt, MK Ultra plus atomic defense, a ton of other great supplements. All together, you could buy them individually for around $600. We're giving it all to you for less than $250. And for VIP members, it's only $199.99. So do not wait. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. If you want to let them know who sent you, get your Faraday bag bundle for a third the price that it could sell for. It could probably sell for a lot more than that, actually. It's really high quality stuff. Get it today. We're running out of supplies. Get yours while you can. Better to have it, not need it, than need it, not have it. Do your prepping before you need to be prepped, folks. And with that, I'm very, very happy to welcome my guest, Royce White. He is a native of Minnesota's Twin Cities, born and raised in St. Paul's historic Rondo community. A standout basketball talent, he was named Minnesota Mr. Basketball in high school, starred in Iowa State University, leading the Big 12 in nearly every major statistical category, and was selected 16th overall by the Houston Rockets in the 2012 NBA Draft. His professional career extended to championship-winning seasons in Canada, where he earned MVP honors and set records, as well as stints in the Big 3-on-3 league, where he currently serves as co-captain. And, of course, it goes on and on. And typically, you know, we would tout your political acumen and all this stuff, but actually, the ball games are important now with what's going on in America. You can follow Royce White by visiting his website, RoyceWhite.us, or by following him on X at Highway_30. Royce, thanks so much for joining us today.
Good afternoon, brother. Good to be here with you.
I'm glad you're here, and I feel like you're the perfect person for the big story that broke yesterday about Chicago Bulls player Jaden Ivey being essentially booted from the team for expressing just the most moderate disagreement with the LGBTQ pride agenda. As somebody with experience in the NBA, what's your take on this? What do you think of what do you think of the reaction that he was actually kicked from the team for what he said?
We're living through a color revolution. That was my initial reaction. Color revolution is here. It's on. It's happening. And my thoughts are always now centered around the global. And in my campaign and running for U.S. Senate, and even when I ran for Congress, one of the things I said often on the trail was that the global affects the local. And I'm constantly thinking about the geopolitics, because how could you not? I mean, we're on the brink of a world war, right? Yeah. As you said. And it just dawns on me that in the vein of what Alex said yesterday on social media and many others in the America First movement who are opposed to the war, it shocks me that, many of our, detractors or critics out there like the Mark Levins don't see the crisis of attacks against Christians here at home just as, if not more dangerous and insidious than whatever dangers there are a world away in the Middle East or anywhere else on the planet. And that was my initial thought, is like, these are the Christian, this is the crisis against Christianity and of our country that we should be focused on. When we say America first, this is exactly what we're talking about. And how could we let this stand, even from a legal and jurisprudential standpoint?
Yep.
You know, they're going to make a thousand excuses and say, oh, well, a private company has the right to fire who they want, to terminate who they want, just like the social media platforms have a right to censor who they want. At some point, our monopoly antitrust laws, at some point, there have to be Christian discrimination lawsuits that protect Christians. Christians are not covered under the law in this country, and that's become extremely obvious.
Yeah, and it is extremely ridiculous because of the, you know, inequity of the way that religions are talked about. I mean, nobody would kick a Muslim off a team for opposing LGBT. They'd be celebrated and uplifted. I mean, the inequity is really glaring when it comes to Christianity, and it's making some people hypocrites. I saw this, and I think this goes to exactly what you're talking about. Dana Lesh, you know, the lady, says the Bulls are punishing a player for being a Christian. This is religious discrimination. Now, she's right. I don't disagree with her. But then somebody else pointed out, you were just supporting this 2 weeks ago when it was Cree Prejean Buller, who, of course, was kicked off of the, you know, White House Religious Tolerance Board for promoting her Christian beliefs. So, I mean, this is a really big issue. And, you know, Jaden Ivey sort of brings it to the fore in popular culture. But, I mean, anti-Christian discrimination is really heating up rapidly. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah, no doubt. And I think the Jaden Ivey story is sort of on three fronts. The first front is, obviously, if the left, the contradiction, if he had come out as gay and he had been let go or released from the team because he was homosexual, the entire left would have cried discrimination. Obviously. I mean, that kind of goes without saying. And they would have demanded legal reparation for it, by the way, for the anti-LGBTQ hatred, bigotry from the NBA. So the double standard is pretty clear. And I think, you know, maybe even more importantly, but certainly just as important, is this color revolution, this stuff from a legal standpoint has reached a level of national security threat. And I do think it's that serious. I mean, people will look at it and say, it's just another NBA player. He can't just be saying whatever he wants. No freedom of speech without consequence. Well, actually, I think we need to, and as you were alluding to in the previous segment, we need to start to evaluate how to properly interpret freedom of speech in the workplace and when it comes to corporations.
Right.
And if we don't do that, then we don't have freedom of speech. Actually, it's just a fictitious idea, much like the rule of law when you have corrupt Supreme Court justices. But, you know, even when it comes to freedom of speech, it's like, yeah, sure, a company has a right to its own freedom of speech in a way. Every corporate entity has a right to express itself how it wants to and fire and hire who it wants. But in principle, it should be trying to, at least on face value, uphold a fair amount of equity, as you would say, as mm-hmm. you put it, equity when it comes to the value of freedom of speech. And it's like they're not even pretending that freedom of speech is a value that they hold in any regard. And it's become widespread on the left across the entire corporatocracy. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, it's the freedom of speech piece just comes and goes. It blows with the wind, and we can't have it that way. And ultimately, if Christians keep getting crushed like this under the weight of this corrupt color revolution, my God, I mean, there won't be a place for us to you know, celebrate Holy Week here in the near future.
So what do we do? What do we do about? I mean, are we just not standing up for ourselves enough? We, you know, the crew just pulled up a headline, and of course they're going to say MAGA cries about Christian discrimination. But there's this, again, you know, inequity. I feel like we need even a better word. So I always say, like, it's not as if, well, a Christian person says something and a Jewish person said the same thing and only the Christian's getting, you know, punished. It's like, right. Okay, a Christian basically said, I think LGBT is kind of unrighteous. That's it. That's what he said. That was the big crime. He gets fired from his job. Meanwhile, you know, well, hell, I mean, especially when you look at the corporate thing, with the NBA, Miles Bridges was a guy who was arrested and criminally charged with multiple felony counts of domestic violence and child abuse after an alleged assault on the mother of his children. He only got a 30-game suspension and remained with the team. Meanwhile, you say that Pride Month is maybe not the most righteous thing in the world, and you get cut. So there's just an inequality, a total unbalance of of the way this is being treated.
Can we go to this for sure? I mean, the NBA. The NBA trying to act like they're the moral arbiter of anything based on this kid's comments is completely dishonest and reprehensible. But can we take it down to this level? I don't want to give any merit to the allegations against Miles Bridges because we know how prominent the Me Too feminism is as well, right? Sure. And on face value, at least, you say this thing happened in the public, so it has a sort of ramification, a ripple effect. You know, you're not treating it fairly. Okay, cool. But the Miles Bridges thing, I know plenty of women who get in a fight with their boyfriend or child's father or husband and say, oh, he beat me up, he's hurting the kid. And we got to put a stop to that, too. That's also part of the legal crisis in our country. But, you know, let's take it down to this level. And I was saying this earlier on my daily call-in show, and now we're doing it in the morning at 7 a.m. I got to get you to come in at 7 a.m. if you're ever up that early and be a guest. But
I stay up that late, maybe.
We'll have you do a 24-hour, hold through to the show.
I'd wake up early for you. That'd be fun.
You know, this even communism, right? Like, and I was saying earlier this morning that we have to start the attack on us through language is profound and significant, and even communism. And today I used the term Fox News communists. And I'm sure that would blow a lot of conservative folks' minds, not the people who watch this show, but just, you know, in general. And the reason why I say is, like, we have to start to really hone in on some of these definitions that we just casually have used over the years. And I think that's true of freedom of speech. But I'll give you an example, and it's not unrelated to the NBA because they have a significant Jewish lobby influence. I mean, Adam Silver's father was the founder of Prokshire in New York City, which was the sine qua non of the legal Jewish sphere of influence in New York City and maybe the entire modern world. I mean, Prokshire was the law firm that the Jewish folks went to because the WASP law firms didn't accept Jews back then, which is just a matter of historical fact. But so it's not by accident Adam Silver's father is the commissioner of the NBA, and they're all lawyers. And the things that they push in terms of the policies and even the way that they treat some of these players is all intended to be a part of the control of the narrative. Communism, for example. Okay. And we're in a war. And it's like, if you believe in the socialization of risk on money that you print that doesn't really exist on the backs of future working class sons, daughters, grandsons, granddaughters, and then you try and paper the whole thing over by placing the interest and burden back on those same people. And then you have a global dollar empire that's based on your currency, you know, the strength and value of your currency or the faith in your currency. You're a communist. Like, if you print money that you don't have and then you send it to a military industrial complex for a world away and you socialize the risk on the working class, you're a communist. And we just have to get razor sharp about how we define these issues. Cause right now I'm saying anybody who's supporting this war in Iran in theory and in principle is a communist. Now I'm not saying there's not a certain level of socialism throughout our entire, country and throughout our entire society, American society or culture. Cause there is a certain amount of socialism we accept. But if you tune into Fox News, they'll go, Governor Tim Walz, he's unfit to be the governor of Minnesota or any state or certainly vice president because he said socialism, one man's socialism is another man's neighborliness. And I would certainly agree that there's only a degree of separation, if that, between socialism and communism. Right. And so from the halls of the Capitol here in St. Paul to the locker rooms of the NBA, to the front line of the war there in Iran, all the way to the CCP in Beijing, we are under a communist color revolution. And it's quite clear, actually, once you kind of just step back from it and let it be what it is. It's very clear.
And it's sort of like, I mean, they still privatize the gains, though, don't they? They socialize the losses and private. So we're really getting the worst of everything.
Ultra-communism.
The worst parts of capitalism, worst parts of communism. It's a smorgasbord. We pick and choose only the worst parts. But no, you're exactly right. And I want to drill down on a couple things you mentioned, which is the pressure that comes to bear on these players, because this seems to be a little bit different than normal. And I wonder if this is a sign of really a significant change in the culture, because typically what would happen, we've seen this before, an athlete would come out, they'd say something, I don't want to do Pride Night. And then it was like they were taken into a back room. God only knows what machine was hooked up to them. But the next day they'd come out going, I'm so sorry. I let my team down. I let my family down. And I just want to apologize. And it's like, what did they do to you? You had a firmly held religious belief yesterday. You're denouncing it today. What do they do to people in between these two announcements?
I could tell you exactly what they do because it happened to me. They threaten you. That's what they do. See, people, and this is, I probably should have led with this. I'm caught up in the geopolitics. I'm running for U.S. Senate. But as far as a personal anecdote about the NBA and how it works, people forget that I fought for mental health policy, not the woke transgender mental health policy. I mean legitimate, like, hey, people are struggling with alcohol abuse and drug addiction and anxiety and depression and PTSD from growing up on the south side of Chicago under Marxist Democrats makes you feel like you lived there through Fallujah. It's about a degree of difference between Fallujah, Iraq in the 90s or 2000s in the south side of Chicago.
Right.
But, you know, I fought the NBA on mental health policy then, and they're so brazen and arrogant. They actually had the audacity to tell me, young man, you're right about the mental health crisis. You're right about the lack of policy. But who are you to force us to do it? You don't have any money yet. You don't have a lot of notoriety or fame. And we are the gatekeepers to the very things you would need to push this cause forward. So you can either shut up and wait until you're a little more famous and rich to be a trailblazer, a pioneer about this specific social issue, which has exploded now nationwide and worldwide. There's a full blown mental health crisis. I would say it's more in pathomania and, you know, mass formation psychosis. But, you know, all in all, it's a mental health crisis.
Yeah.
And they told me straight up and down, you can shut up and play along and we'll help you do everything you want to do.
Oh, sure.
Or you can keep talking and you'll be, a joke in the ash bin of history. And I actually told David Stern in a conversation that the both of us had that he was going to die before I did and that God will not be mocked. And it, at the end of the day, they could keep their money. They can have their money. They can have their superficial fame and status. But here I am anyway, and I'm going to continue to fight. A lot of these players don't have that same courage. They feel that when you grow up as a basketball player from 5 years old, that's right. All you've ever done, especially with any rigorous discipline, your entire identity is wrapped up in the sport. And so you finally make it to the pinnacle. Your dream comes true. And you have these people who you've never met pull you into a black room, no pun intended, pull you into a back room and threaten to take your dream away from you. Of course, a lot of people are gonna fold under that pressure.
And it's social pressure too, isn't it? That's what I always assume because I try to picture how these conversations go, and I always imagine the, hey, look, we understand you have a really, you know, you should feel strongly about this, and we respect that, but do you really want to make the rest of the team suffer? You know, you're going to really cost these guys a championship if you keep going like this. Is that really what you want to? I mean, how much is that sort of pressure used, or is it more just blunt? I mean, the way you're saying it, it sounds like they're just straight up like, we will destroy you, so shut up. I mean,
the loose camaraderie that comes through in the promotion of basketball is just that. It's very loose behind the scenes. I mean, they may try and run that gamut on you like, hey, you're going to mess up the chemistry but you got to remember Michael Jordan, the greatest player of all time, took his own private plane away from the other players because hell, he was Michael Jordan. And in many ways, he had earned that right. And I'm not against that. I mean, from a meritocratic standpoint, if Michael Jordan wanted to take two unicorns to the basketball right. game, fair play to him, right? Because he earned that.
He earned it.
He's the greatest of all time. But, you know, that's probably not as much as your agent would come to you, you know, maybe your financial advisor, maybe, somebody from one of the shoe companies from the endorsement side of things, maybe your publicist, right? And they have these backdoor channels to the league or the commissioner or, you know, the team administration. And there's a conversation that happens behind your back about the, you know, the betterment of your career and your financial stability and your mother and father. They get them on the phone or on the plane to come in and say, hey, don't forget, you know, we got to keep paying for your little brother's private school.
Right.
Right. So they use the social pressure in that way. And then when all else fails, they'll just wage a full-blown media propaganda campaign against you, like they're doing to this young man right now.
Yeah.
There's actually a thread of social media that would suggest this kid isn't good enough to have an opinion that's controversial, which is blatantly immoral, right? Just in principle. I mean, who cares how many points he's scoring? Why should that even impact what he's saying, if he has a right to, and if it's true? And then obviously that he's bigoted, right? That he's hateful for even saying there's an unrighteousness to this propaganda, which is them doubling down on the communist color revolution, that there are no sexual ethics or morals anymore. Unless your name is President Trump or anybody else who wants to run for office, then any woman you ever slept with or even looked at becomes a cudgel that's going to be used against you.
Yeah, that's very true. And of course, you know, this goes back. There was a decision yesterday about conversion therapy. My argument always was you can either ban both or ban neither. But obviously there's an ideological monopolization that's going on where they're saying you have to promote pride, which is a moral framework that is different and contrary to Christianity. They're saying you cannot promote Christianity. You have to promote pride. I mean, if that's not a violation of the fundamental, you know, purpose of the First Amendment and freedom of religion, I don't know what is.
I'm not sure how we've gotten to this place, but we certainly need to do something fast to get out of it. And again, like I said earlier, I think the war is a world away. You know, there are two competing theories. And one, you could say, hey, President Trump just wanted to remind the Muslims that we will do violence, because there is a doormat Christianity that pervades all of Western society.
True.
And that's part of what we're talking about here, is this doormat Christianity has been crushed under the Supreme Court or the courts down the trough. Yep. Here in this country, it's been crushed by the corporatocracy. Christianity is getting crushed at every angle. So at least the president had the military to send a gut punch, a reminder to the Muslims. Hey, we will do violence. We're not just going to sit back and watch this. So there's that theory of the case. And then there's the theory of the case that even if you accept that that is true and maybe necessary, the real crisis of an intifada, of a communist color revolution, of the traitors in the courts or in the Senate or in the House, it's right here at home. I mean, right. the front wave of that war is right here in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota, where Ilhan Omar seems all but can't be defeated in her district. Yeah. I mean, that tells you where the fight really is. It's not in Tehran or anywhere in the Middle East.
Yeah, absolutely. I could not agree with you more. Can you stay with us for the whole hour? I wasn't sure if you could keep us. You can? Okay, thank you very much. All right, because I don't want to end right now. There's so much more to get into, because this really does sort of touches everything that we're talking about today. It does have to do with the Iran war and the effects that it's having here, and the effects of Israel and trying to push anti-Semitism bills. I mean, we are very rapidly, literally losing the First Amendment because we're not fighting for it, because we're not standing up for ourselves. And I see sort of a similarity. I always talk about how, you know, the leftist view of race is very sort of a weird inverted white supremacy, where they go, you know, white people are fine. We don't have to protect ourselves. We don't need any, you know, defense. We're white people. We'll be fine. It's like, no, you won't. And it's almost the same with Christianity, where it's just like, we're Christian. We're all Christian. It's fine. It's like, no, you can go away too. You deserve protection too. More with Royce White on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15, 20-point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades. So they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research. The human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. So we've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our Ultra Methylene Blue and the new T3, that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined by Royce White. He, of course, hosts the Sunday night show here on InfoWars, does an incredible job with that every Sunday evening. You can get to his website by going to RoyceWhite.us. You can follow him on X at Highway_30. We're talking about all sorts of stuff, but sort of centralizing our discussion on the fact that the Bulls NBA team has waived Jaden Ivey after anti-religion LGBTQ rants, is how the New York Post puts it, or as a post-millennial, pro sports players stand up for Jaden Ivey as he's canceled by Chicago Bulls over Christian beliefs. I think that's a more accurate headline. It does feel a little bit different this time, though, doesn't it, Royce? I mean, we've seen this not the first time somebody's been canceled for something like this, but he hasn't apologized. It seems like the outrage I'm seeing is a lot more, and there are a lot of pro athletes, even if they're not coming out blatantly and saying it, they're making social media posts just saying, hey, Jesus is king, you know, and just sort of signaling, hey, I stand with Jaden. Does this feel different to you? Does this signal a shift in the wider consciousness?
I think so. You know, and I think overall your athletes are going to look, a part of this communist color revolution that's not really talked about so much right now is the attempt to take some of the youngest, strongest men in our society, which some of these professional athletes are some of the most incredible human beings to ever live. I mean, in the history of human civilization, some of the things they can do physically and movement wise is next to supernatural. And there is a sort of cultural effect and intent to take the strongest young men amongst us and neuter them, and emasculate them, you know, and turn them into eunuchs, put them in dresses, and normalize this effeminate, which then becomes homosexual or, in the worst case scenario, transgender mentality. Yep. And so I think naturally, as we track along here, people got to remember these things happen over long courses of time, or sometimes over a longer course of time. As we track along here, the American professional sports culture, the excellence, the mastery of skill, the hard work and discipline it takes to become a high level professional athlete is so diametrically opposed to the everybody's equal egalitarianism of the far left. There's naturally going to be a friction and a collision at some point. I just think that this Jaden Ivey story and the Christian piece of it is the fuel is fueling something that's it's a powder keg already, because you can't take men who believe in merit just naturally from their career or their passion, the thing that they're good at. You can't take those men and tell them everybody should be equal and then tell them, well, you're not equal if you believe in Christ. It's like, what kind of racket is that?
Right.
You know, so I think naturally this thing is going to unravel. The question is, will we be able to hold the country long enough? Will we be able to keep in the fight long enough to take back some of the institutions, right? I mean, that's the whole point of deconstructing administrative state and going against the deep state and shattering the security state and all the things that the MAGA movement said that it was planning to do. And some of them we're doing. Some of them we haven't done. I'm in favor. I'm a maximalist. I'm in favor of doing radical things like let's arrest some United States senators and Supreme Court justices. Right. I think President Trump should arrest Chief Justice Roberts. I always hearken people back to Abraham Lincoln suspending habeas corpus and telling Chief Justice Taney, as the rumor goes, told Chief Justice Taney in the United States versus Merriman decision, if you release Merriman or any of these other Confederates, I'm going to arrest you next.
Right.
And he understood the dire nature of the situation. And I don't know that President Trump either does or that the American people have the stomach for him to go maximalist. I know we all say we want that, but I kind of get the sense if he went max, over half, and maybe more than over half of the Republican caucus would sponsor his impeachment papers the next day. You know, if he was to actually arrest John Thune on dereliction of duty charges for withholding secure elections from American citizens, I think your average Republican would say that's a step too far. And I say that for a reason. I use that example to draw back to the NBA. I think a lot of Fox News communists look at professional sports and what happened with Colin Kaepernick, and they're so, and rightfully so, discontent with what's happened to American professional sports. They say, oh, well, this is unacceptable. Well, what if President Trump, put out an executive order and we were going to, bring down the hammer, some harsh penalties or sanctions on some of these companies that were anti-Christian? Would Republicans say that that's an overreach of the executive? And I tend to think that they would. So, we find ourselves in a peculiar situation where people know what the problem is, but they don't necessarily want to take the prescription or the cure.
You're exactly right. It's like the biggest issue we have right now is like trying to get through to the Republicans. Like, what do y'all not understand about the condition that America's in, about the seriousness of the problems that we face? And it kind of goes along with, I want to ask the other players on the Bulls, like, why would you not stand up for your teammate? Why would you not, like, I get that it's important that you want to have your million-dollar career and you don't want to cause trouble. I get that would be inconvenient. But like, do you not get what's at risk here? Do you not understand that, like, each one of these instances is another incremental, it's another bar on the jail cell around us? How do we convey to people the importance of what's going on? We can, I could talk to Senator John Thune and try to explain to him, what's happening. At the end of the day, he's just, it's just how it is. It's just the way we do it. And it's like, yeah. What do we have to do to get through to some of these people? and just and get them to take the necessary measures.
Yeah, you got to start arresting some people. That's for sure.
Be a good place to start.
It'd be a good place to start. Yeah. And again, even from a cultural standpoint, when you talk about the makeup of an NBA team, half of those players on each team don't believe in God in the first place. Mm. I mean, or they only casually or loosely believe in God, much like a lot of the 501c3 Christians all across our great nation here. We don't live in a Christian nation. We live in a nation that should be Christian, that was intended to be predominantly Christian, but we're so far from that. It's almost laughable at this point, right? Because if you're a Christian nation, you don't let communists and Satanists and pedophiles take over,
right?
Just from the outset. I mean, that would be a non-starter. It isn't a non-starter. But half of those players on those teams don't even believe in God. The other half are frightened to lose financial security in what is a very financially insecure environment nationwide. I mean, we have real financial insecurity that's widespread. So, I mean, imagine you're accustomed to the high life. You don't want to lose that. And this goes to a much deeper issue of radical materialism and communism and Marxism and the reduction of the human existence down to price.
Yep.
And we have to understand, all of us, and even President Trump. That's why I don't like when he says, oh, me and President Xi have a good relationship. No, you don't. He wants to kill you. Because, again, if Iran is being subsidized by China in an Iron Triangle alliance and the Iranians sanctioned a hit on the president, that would mean China sanctioned a hit on the president. So he's not your friend. But what we can definitively say about China is that they are a nation led by tyrannical and authoritarian engineers. We are a nation that wanted to be a nation of ideas and laws. So naturally, we're a nation led by lawyers. When you put tyrannical engineers versus crony capitalist lawyers, the tyrannical engineers win 9 times out of 10. And so the question we have to ask ourselves is there any scenario where a nation ruled by lawyers, in general, lawyers, can beat a nation ruled by tyrannical engineers? I think the answer is yes, but the premium on the rule of law and the integrity of the institutions that uphold the rule of law has to be almost unimpeachable, unassailable. And we're so far from that. It's that in and of itself is almost a concession to our defeat of by the Chinese, because we don't, I mean, we're inverted. We think of the law as something that should, you know, almost axiomatically be corrupt. Like, yeah, well, it's the law. Of course, it's pay to play. I mean, if you can't afford a good lawyer, of course the judge is going to hit you with the book. Alex Jones in a civil case where you owe $1 billion. I mean, this thing is, I thought it was out of control then. Right. When Alex Jones was sued and they awarded $1 billion, I said, oh, tyranny. Right. And people kind of looked at it, even on the right, and said, well, yeah, Alex Jones deserved it. He shouldn't have been running his mouth like that. Well, now you get a Christian, young Christian man who says, hey, the LGBTQ is a little unrighteous. And the NBA throws the book at him, you know, metaphorically. And then the same conservatives who okayed Alex Jones being sued into oblivion are now mad that the Christian can't say what he wants. What don't you people get? They're all connected.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all connected to the same communist color revolution.
Yeah, that has to hollow out our country, has to undermine our foundational beliefs. And they often do it by sort of using our own beliefs against us. And I mean, this is something I say all the time, is like, you're not a good person for being taken advantage of. People really think that it's like mean to defend yourself. It's mean to lay down the law. It's like, no, mercy to the guilty is violence to the innocent, right? You have to be hardcore about this stuff. And you're right. I don't understand how we've gone so far off the mark. And it seems like, especially, I mean, even like when arguing with the leftists, it's like, all right, you like all these things like welfare and the, you know, government money come to you. Shouldn't they be the ones who are concerned about the fraud? They don't care about the fraud for some reason. It's like, we have to have more hardcore laws here. We have to have people stick to it. The judges won't convict anybody. Somebody just stole, you know, tens of millions of dollars. This woman, Zamzam, her name is Zamzam. She was just convicted. I think $40 million, if I'm not mistaken, that she stole. She was asked to pay back less than $500,000. She'll spend 6 months in prison. By August this year, she'll be back in Somalia with tens of millions of stolen dollars. And it's like, that's the justice system. Meanwhile, I'm sure you've heard the story. A guy's facing 10 years for cheating in a fishing tournament. It's like everything has gone off the rails, Royce. Like,
yes.
How, and the problem is that our system is so broken now, it's opening up an opportunity for the communists, for the radicals, for the revolutionaries to come in and go, this system's messed up. You need us. You need our new amazing system that I promise is going to make everything right. How do we fix the system while still trying to uphold the system? We don't want to tear it down. We want to fix. It's a complicated issue. How do we approach this?
I think the reason why people are willing to put up with it is because they enjoy the benefits. As I said about the Somali community, I did this PBS Frontline interview, and I said people crave tyranny. And the interviewer at the time, I know him, been knowing him for many years now. He works for PBS, or he's an independent contractor. Anyway, he's like, well, I don't want tyranny. I don't want to live under a tyrant. I go, yeah, so you say. I mean, Aristotle's Fifth Book of Politics tells us that women and slaves love tyrants. We got a lot of women running this country, but we also have a lot of slaves, debt slaves, wage slaves, right? So, I mean, I think the dark truth is people crave tyranny because it's convenient. And
it's easy.
It's easy, yeah. And, we take the benefits. It's like the Somali community, for example. Oh, ICE is terrorizing us. Oh, the federal government's overreaching. This is tyranny. Well, you accept the subsidies. You can't have you can't have it both ways. You can't have a government that's inflated well beyond its rightful size and think that tyranny isn't going to – you're not going to feel the sting of tyranny and then say, oh, well, but it's okay because I still get my social programs. And that's the left right now. Of course they don't care if Somalis – because we're printing more money. As long as they get their SNAP benefits – they don't care if, and this is the danger. This is what they would call in the financial sector, moral hazard, right? The sort of subtle unintended consequences of certain financial instruments and mechanisms. Like if you're going to print money and there's no penalty, no real penalty or consequences for stealing money or losing money, the Department of Defense, hey, we lost another $2 trillion. What the hell? Doesn't matter. If there's no consequences, as I've said for many years, even when I was back on Jason Whitlock's show, when your government steals, everybody steals. See, right. This is how the Republicans really get us, though. They want our political identity to be attached to the cultural wedge issues just as much as the left, because it's easy for them to control the narrative around cultural wedge issues. Even the LGBTQ, women playing in men's sports. My Senate opponent, Michelle Tafoya, her whole campaign is we got to get men out of women's sports. It's like, you want to be United States centered. And I get that's ridiculous and an abomination that we've allowed that to happen. But talk to me about monetary policy.
Right.
Talk to me about foreign policy. Talk to me about legacy institutions that have generations of corruption throughout. Don't talk to me about a couple of weird tranny dudes and, you know, playing in sports. That goes without saying, right? Or should. But, you know, it's the Fox News MO is, pay attention to the young black men who are, snatching bags out of department stores. It's like, well, you know, you could take every black person in America and add up all the merchandise they've stolen for the last 100 years, and it wouldn't be a drop in the bucket for $2 trillion that the Department of Defense just misplaced.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, well, those two things aren't connected. It's like, oh, really, Mark Levin? They're not connected? Oh, sure. Sure, buddy. You know, let's just go by the quantitative measure. The more money you steal, the greater penalty. You know, there shouldn't be a reprieve for stealing more money. It's like the difference between white collar crime and blue collar crime. It's like, well, you know, they only stole money in the stock exchange. It's like, well, that has a real world, effect on people. Like, where are we getting off letting these white collar, cosmopolitan, omnisexual globalists get away with this financial racket?
Yep.
Racketeering is what it is. Through our own military industrial complex, we pay for it. But, you know, people would have to wake up and get wise to that. And if they did, you'd never vote for a Gavin Newsom again.
Yep.
Like, oh, I revere Israel. It's like, no, fuck off, buddy. You know, what a jerk off, right? I mean, it's all of them, right? It's all of them. But then it's so bad, even Massey. And I've asked this question a number of times. Maybe you can help me out with the thinking. See, even Massey, who I like and I agree with a lot, and you know, it's just like, well, the Congress is captured, 95% captured. But then you want the president to come to the Congress and ask them for permission to do anything. It's like, wouldn't that be a concession to the capture? And I get it. It's like, well, we got to follow the rules. It's like, no, you guys didn't play sports. When a scuffle breaks out in the middle of a game, there are no more rules.
Yep.
There are no more. When I get hit with that bean pitch and I storm the mound, we're emptying these dugouts. And the only way the only way we go back to the rules is if both teams say, we've had enough, we want to return back to the rules. Then you can go back to the previous rules. But until then, the rules are effectively suspended. This is a blood sport now in basketball and don't even talk about MMA. But you know, that's kind of my mentality, is like, there's a suspension of the rules. The left suspended them. The communists suspended them. The globalists suspended them. The only one playing by the rules are the doormat Christians and the cuckservatives.
And they're doing it themselves. Like we're doing it ourselves. We're enforcing it on ourselves. And I think you're exactly right, because our whole system depends on precedent, right? And this is always the excuse from the Republicans as well. We can't do that because what if they come back and do it to us? That doesn't work when the left routinely does things that are unprecedented, routinely does things that have no precedent at all in law or justice or morality or anything. And then Republicans refuse to return the favor. Cause you know, like you said, like once the scuffle breaks out, you know, it's all bets are off, clear the dugouts, let's go. But even in smaller ways, it's like if you're playing on team and they go, oh, well, we don't play that. We don't play offsides. We don't play whatever it is. You know, we do a change rule. And it's like, okay, that's the new rule. Now you have to play by that. So, okay, if they want to throw people in jail for January 6th, I guess that's the new rule. I guess we have to play by that. And that actually is the reason why, you know, the precedent setting works, is because we need Democrats to go, ooh, if we do that, they're going to do it to us. But they know we're not going to do it to them, so they can do whatever the hell they want. And Republicans will sit there following the rules that are no longer valid.
Yes. No, that's 100% right. And we just got to get some toughness and grit. I said it the other day about when I did the show on Sunday about the 1776 mantra so oftenly invoked by conservatives. And it's like, well, you know, what about law enforcement? I mean, we have a default position on the right that comes from the conservative Fox News communists that says anything a cop tells you to do ever, you should just listen. You should obey. It's like, excuse me. What did you just say? What if they tell me I have to take a vaccine or provide my vaccine mandate papers? Do I still have to obey and listen? Oh, well, that wouldn't happen. Oh, really? Mark Levin, you're vaccinated, buddy. I mean, and we know it. So, and I don't mean to keep picking on him, but he has become, you know, sort of the titular head of Conservative Inc. and the messaging and narrative. And it's just like, where do these people get off with these type of brazen contradictions? Their logic is so flawed. And the fact that people are even willing to listen to them, let alone follow them, is a sign of a decadent culture. But I hope we could turn it around. You can't preclude miracles, especially during Holy Week, right? Mm. Christ is risen and miracles are possible. So we could turn it around, but we need some hellacious fighters right now to step up and just say things like you are. If you support the war in Israel, you're a communist. Why? Socialism and communism are only a degree away, and we're socializing the risk of our phony money in order to fund the war. So you're just as much of a socialist as the Somalis who stole a state taxpayer money.
Yep. And or just stand on the First Amendment and go, sorry, you don't have a right to tell me what I can and can't say. I don't care if you think it's hateful. I don't care if you think it's anti-Semitic. I get to say what I want. And actually, it's those things that are hateful or anti-Semitic or whatever. That is literally the reason the First Amendment was written. Obviously, it is the thing that gives Jews the right to practice their religion and Catholics the right to practice their religion. It also, incumbent in that right, is the right for everybody else to criticize, mock, denigrate. It doesn't matter. It's the same rule that gives both of these rights to the American people. And that is where the biggest threat is coming from, as far as I can see it. The push for anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism laws, and the hatred of Christianity and the discrimination against Christians. I mean, this is a major problem that we have to identify and fight against. What's the best way to do that, do you think?
Well, I think we're at a point now where we can't rely on the Supreme Court or any other courts to adjudicate that type of justice or fairness interpretation of the laws that we already have. A commander in chief, a warrior philosopher, is going to have to take power in this country at some point and bring down the hammer. Now, I'm not ever for rounding people up and having, you know, kangaroo witch hunt, lawfare or weaponized courts. But, you know, some of these things are sort of explicitly anti-Christian, anti-American, anti-human.
Yep.
It's like, look at what happened in Spain. Euthanasia. I mean, where are we headed? We know where we're headed. We're looking at the inevitability of what we will become when we see a euthanization carried out on a 24-year-old young, healthy bodied, abled woman in Spain, in Europe. And then we're paying to subsidize their territorial integrity. It's like at the moment where they lose the sanctity of life, we should be pulling out of NATO. Mm-hmm. And that should just be a matter of principle and morality. But we don't have that moral structure. Okay, fine. If the rules are there are no morals, then let's just call it that. Let's just say that. I mean, but let's not say we're going to fight a war for Israel on behalf of Christianity and you know, our morals. It's like, no, you're not.
No. Yeah.
I mean, who do you think you're, come on. Don't even say that. Like I'd rather you just come out and say, we don't give a damn about the morals or the ethics. There are no rules. There are no morals. We're going to win the Darwinian game, and that's just the way we're playing it. Okay, now we can have a better conversation. But when you undermine the Christian ethic at a fundamental level, you have abnegated your legitimacy to say that it's in a pursuit of a Christian formulation of thought or culture. That's just blasphemy, is what it is in Holy Week here. That, my friends, is blasphemy.
And we see it everywhere. It's absolutely constant and ridiculous. Just incredible stuff. Royce White is my guest. RoyceWhite.us is the website. @Highway_30 on X. And, of course, you're running for Senate. How can people help you with that? Any events coming up? Anything you need people to know about your campaign?
Yes, U.S. Senate. I'm running for U.S. Senate again. Tina Smith, open seat. Running hopefully against a Democrat, Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Protect trans rights with the knife. Angie Craig. $3 million from AIPAC. On my side, you got Michelle Tafoya, pro-choice, pro-Zionist, and you got Adam Schwarzy, 20-year naval vet, recently the CIA, pro-life, pro-Zionist. I mean, they're trying to pincer me at every angle here.
Right, they got you at every corner.
But hey, I'm just a dumb black Negro from the neighborhood, and I'm America first, so I guess that makes me persona non grata. And I wear it as a badge of honor. Come see me and Mike Lindell at Wayzata Middle School if you're in Minnesota on April 8th.
Well, we need more people like you in the government, man. We wouldn't be in this situation in the first place if we had more. RoyceWhite.us @Highway_30 on X. Thank you so much for being here with us, sir. It's very, very interesting times we live in, and the cultural landscape is shifting underneath us. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com to support everything that we do here. We're running out of Faraday bags, so get yours while you still can. Stay tuned. I'll be joined very shortly by Tiffany Cianci with some breaking news about pesticide law that nobody else has. This is an exclusive coming up.
Let me do this. The folks at Bigley, about 7-8 months ago, came out with this top-of-the-line Faraday cage backpack with all these special pockets, super high quality. I'd previously bought a bag for myself personally like this, similar brand, $400 or $500. The problem was they only got 500 of these. Well, guess what? They got a couple thousand of them finally in. It took 7-8 months. It's a $600 value, just the bag, for $249, but guess what comes in it? America First Faraday bag, America First Tactical Trench Knife, it's badass, America First T-shirt, MK Ultra Atomic Defense Supplements, Shilajit Gummy, Shilajit Capsules, Irish Sea Moss Capsules, Warcry Premium product, and more. And VIP members get it for $199. Also, as you can now read in the newspapers, the Texas receiver is saying he's not going to pay the rent or the bills. So you ask, when are we going to be shut down? Tomorrow? 2 weeks from now? I'm going to just wait till the lights turn off, okay? You'll probably see InfoWars go down the site. You see streaming shut down. Once we can't do it, we have the All Shows Network built at Bigley Owns, and I'm going to go over and do it there. But I'm going to ride this horse till it dies. I'm going to ride this race car till the engine blows or the wheels come off. Or I crash into the embankment. I ain't giving up. I'm riding this horse till I win or I lose. And then the media's like, oh, he's finally going to lose. Oh, yeah, all right. I am the InfoWar. Our listeners are the InfoWar. And we got a whole line. Here's the first one of limited edition Veterans of the InfoWar t-shirts. Look at this. This is badass. And it's the troops on Iwo Jima raising the American flag with the InfoWars patch where the stars are. InfoWars lives forever. It is an amazing limited edition shirt. Look at that bad boy. And it funds this operation, but also the Alex Jones Network to keep us on the air. We need funds. We want to get more reporters back and expand, but we need your support. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
All right, folks, welcome back. It is 5 o'clock Central Time here on April 1st, and we are eagerly awaiting the launch of the Artemis rocket to and around the moon, supposedly. And if that happens while we're live, we'll certainly go to it. It is something to note. We are still capable of great things. We can never tear ourselves away from the misery and chaos we seem obsessed with causing all around us. We could reach for the stars. It is possible, and that's worth reminding ourselves. Now, we'll keep an eye on that. We're also going to keep an eye on President Trump's big announcement that should be coming up later today. But I'll be joined shortly by Tiffany Cianci with some exclusive information about pesticides and some communication she's been in with some of the people on Capitol Hill. I'm going to start with a short report by her. So we'll go now to this Tiffany Cianci video. And when we get back after a short commercial break, I'll be joined by Tiffany Cianci herself with some exclusive information you're not going to find anywhere else. Here's the teaser for you.
Of America, horrifying news out of the state of Kansas, as now pesticide companies cannot be held responsible even if their products cause people harm. So the state of Kansas has ruled on the side of Bayer Monsanto, saying that they deserve a liability shield so people cannot sue Bayer Monsanto in the state of Kansas if pesticides cause them health problems. So even if the pesticides cause cancer, neurological problems, liver failure, you cannot sue Bayer Monsanto now in the state of Kansas. Now, this bill was passed by Republicans because Bayer Monsanto had been lobbying the state of Kansas for months, but the Democrat governor of Kansas was set to veto the bill. However, the Republican supermajority overruled the governor. And now in the state of Kansas, if pesticides cause harm to you, you cannot be compensated for that. The pesticide companies are immune from litigation. They have a shield now. So if you're working in the farm fields using Roundup and you get liver disease from the Roundup, it's not Roundup's fault, it's your fault. You get cancer from using their product, they didn't warn you with a label, that's not their fault. It's somehow your fault. Little kid gets a neurological disorder from being exposed to too many pesticides. Guess what? You cannot sue Bayer Monsanto, nor can you be compensated. You get sick and you pay for it yourself, and then you fucking die. Eat shit, asshole. By the way, just so you know, there are about 15 pieces of legislation backed by Bayer Monsanto, giving them a shield so you can't sue them or get compensation if their products cause you harm. Also, they're trying to do that at the Supreme Court. Arguments being held at the end of this month. The pesticide company Bayer Monsanto that makes Roundup are doing everything in their power to make sure that they're not held responsible if their products make you sick. They don't even want to update the label saying it might cause harm. They want to pretend everything is good. Even if new evidence comes out saying their shit makes you sick, they want a liability shield so they don't have to tell the general public. That's what they're fighting for right now. And the state of Kansas, the Republicans there, drank the Kool-Aid. The people's voice in this country doesn't even matter at this point. It's whatever corporations and lobbyists want. That's it. You have no voice whatsoever. It doesn't matter if you vote Democrat, Republican, socialist, communist, fascist. Doesn't even matter. You have no voice at all. They're just gonna circumvent you. 95% of America wants something? Shut the fuck up, bitch. We're circumventing you and doing what the 5% want. That's what America is now. And if you don't believe it, let me ask you, when was the last time your voice was heard and anything you wanted got done in America? The answer is almost never. And since now pesticide companies are immune from litigation, it probably will make you sick.
Yeah, I think he's right. Yeah, no, I get exactly what that guy's saying. It's happening on the national level. It's happening on the state level. We're under a constant barrage. The America itself and our people are under concerted, universal attack. And we'll tell you how to fight back on the other side with Tiffany Cianci. Don't go anywhere, folks.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra methylene blue. Blue.
I know. Blue. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra methylene blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town.
I know. I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra methylene blue. 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 I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up
about
it. Get yours now at thealexshowstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
From the front lines of the information war, this is The War Room with Harrison Smith. Join the battle now on band.video and X worldwide.
All right, folks, there's the live footage of the Artemis spacecraft that will soon be taking American astronauts to the dark side of the moon, where I vacation. Very exciting stuff. A reminder that if we felt like it, that this could be what we turn all of our energy towards. Wouldn't that be something? Exploring space, achieving great things, conquering unknown vistas. No. Instead, we're being bankrupt by Somali scammers, going to war in Iran for a foreign state, and now it's legal to poison us, apparently. So we're going to talk about that with Tiffany Cianci. We're getting connected with her right now. In the meantime, I'd like to go to a few stories here that don't really fit in with our other topics. And this first one, I'd like to go to clip 44 after this, but the report from NBC News as of yesterday says Medicaid cuts threaten hundreds of hospitals, new report finds. So more than 400 hospitals, they say, across the United States are at high risk of closing or cutting services because of the Medicaid cuts in President Donald Trump's Big Beautiful Bill. According to, get this, an analysis from progressive watchdog group Public Citizen. Okay. Oh, the progressive Democrats have said that Trump's cuts are hurting people. I guess we can't do it anymore. Here's the problem, though. NBC themselves made a report 2 years ago, 3 years ago at this point, 2023, about the real reason that hospitals were overloaded and going bankrupt. Let's go to clip 44 here.
We're back now with a record number of migrants crossing into the U.S., pushing resources to the limit in many American cities. Now hospitals are sounding the alarm, saying they're also overwhelmed, including some far from the border. Julia Ainsley has our report.
Tonight, the border crisis surging. Officials telling NBC News there were over 200,000 illegal crossings at the southern border last month.
Remember what
and
it was
a
like
record
in 2023?
3 million migrants crossed the border in the last year. Now, a new warning, 1,000 miles away in New York City, where officials tell us resources are overwhelmed. Across public hospitals in New York City over the last year, nearly 30,000 visits by migrants and 300 new babies born to migrant moms. Staff here at Bellevue Hospital tell us they're eager to help, but the numbers are tough.
This has been the hardest work that I've ever done, but it's been the most impactful work that I've ever done.
And most of the visits to the taxpayer-funded legal clinic here are by migrants.
Our clinics are full, and there are waiting lists, and people are turning people away or referring them to other places.
Randy Redkin from New York's Legal Assistance Group says so many migrants are asking for legal help on asylum representation and healthcare access. Now, she says, American citizens who need legal assistance with issues like eviction and insurance have to wait up to 10 weeks.
If you ask me, do we need more resources for legal services? I would say absolutely yes.
Meanwhile, New York's governor now slamming the situation at the border.
It is too open right now. People coming from all over the world are finding their way through, simply saying they need asylum.
And New York Mayor Eric Adams saying providing services for migrants will cost city taxpayers $12 billion. But Biden administration officials have blamed Adams' response. It is not an operationally sound effort, one senior DHS official told NBC News. Meanwhile, migrants on the streets are desperate for city help. We met Orlando, who fled violence in Venezuela. He didn't want to appear on camera, telling us he slept on the street before coming to Bellevue for cancer treatment.
How is that for you, given your medical condition, to be sleeping on the street?
You have to make believe it's a good bed, a king size, and you lie down wherever and go to sleep, he says. Orlando tells us he came to New York because he heard about the social services the city would offer to migrants like himself, who were trying to start a new life.
The Biden administration recently granted temporary legal status to nearly 500,000 Venezuelans, allowing them to work. Today, Governor Hochul announced there are 18,000 jobs now available to eligible migrants.
Thanks for watching. Stay updated.
Thanks for watching. Stay updated on how the Biden administration is systematically destroying your country. And we're covering for him. Remember, y'all just that was a little trip back to the past, what it used to be like in old 2023. Outrageous, insane, treasonous, every single part of that, everybody involved needs to be charged with something. So that's actually the problem. The actual problem with America's hospitals is not that they're inefficient. Well, they are deeply inefficient. Actually, there's another problem on top of all of it, which if we come to .com, the 3,000% growth in administrators versus doctors. HHS cuts target the real problem. So, yeah, this chart, this is growth over time starting from 1970 to 2009. You can see the number of physicians basically remained entirely flat, like hardly raises at all. Meanwhile, the administrators looks like friggin' Mount Everest over here. This is the problem. Like, we have this thing in America where you look at just the latest bill versus the money that we have, and it's like, oh my God, we need more money. Well, what about the bill? What is added to this bill? How about we go back in time and we undo some of the problems that got us to this point? The hospitals in America, like, we're America. We are the pioneers of modern hospital technology the world over. Like, it has nothing to do with us. It has nothing to do with us. If Americans were left alone, our hospitals would continue to be the best in the world. They'd also be incredibly cheap and affordable and efficient and available for you at any time. Instead, what's happened is you had Obamacare come in and make insurance utterly unaffordable for anybody because you gave a blank check to the insurance companies to write to themselves, charging whatever the hell they want for whatever the hell they want. And they're in cooperation with the hospitals when they do this. This is how you get things like, you know, $20 for a aspirin pill because no real human being's having to pay for it. The insurance company is, you know, billing you over time and that cost will be spread out. They'll get their money. Hospitals get their money. All of this facilitated by the interruption of business by the government coming in and trying to make it cheaper for everybody. Excuse me, made it significantly worse for everybody. But then on top of that, you have migrants coming in who don't pay for health care. For them, there's universal health care in America. Not for you. If you go to the hospital, you'll be stuck with a medical bill. You'll have to go bankrupt if you can't pay for it, or you'll be denied your pre-existing conditions. For the illegal immigrants that come in, they go to the hospital, they get whatever the hell they need, then they walk out, and the bill gets sent to you. They set this up to be this way. And of course, the incentive for the migrants becomes go to the hospital for whatever. It literally costs them nothing. So now if you fall off a ladder and break your leg and are sitting in the waiting room with extreme pain, you know, trying to get your body fixed, you're sitting behind 50 illegal immigrants who are there for because they have the sniffles. Why wouldn't they go to the ER? Like, we have to think about it. Right? Americans have to go, ooh, is this worth the $1,000 ambulance ride and the $2,000 hospital stay? Is it really that big, or can I walk this off, or can I you know, book my doctor in a month and still be okay then. We actually have to take that into consideration. You wouldn't have to if it was free. And by free, I mean somebody else paying for it. So, but we don't look at any of this. It's like, how did the hospital become insolvent? Well, participation of the government, the expansion of Medicaid, the fact that they're allowing illegal immigrants to take advantage of our system. And I believe in California, I think I have this right, what they would do would be basically hide the fact that it was an illegal alien. And they would basically charge all of the illegal alien stuff through Medicaid or Medicare, basically pretending like it was what they needed just for Americans treatment. They just hide where the money was actually going, that it was going to people who don't qualify for these things. But we don't look at any of that. For some reason, we cannot possibly go back and say, how did we get to this point? It's like all we can do is just provide more money as a patch on the problem, which means we're never getting to the underlying fundamental disconnect at play, which means the problems are only going to get worse, especially when you have everything that contributed to the insolvency of the modern medical system only getting worse over time, only being exacerbated, only with more and more migrants coming in and taking advantage of our system and doing it because they want to take advantage of our system. Like in that, you know, video report you just saw, it's like, oh, he came here because he knew that New York would treat his cancer. Like, doesn't everywhere else in the world have, aren't we constantly being told that America is this evil, unique country that doesn't have universal health care? How about we just send them all to Canada? How about if they want to have universal health care, we have a next door neighbor that provides such a service. What if everybody who comes to America and goes to an American hospital gets put in a vacuum tube and shot straight to Canada? I think that would be a good solution because, in effect, they're like forcing us to have the worst parts of universal health care. We pay endlessly for universal health care for people who never paid into it in the first place, have never paid taxes here in America. What the hell are we doing? Everything is like this. Why is literally everything like this? Where's the reset button? How do we power down for a decade and then power back up? Because our problem is that we're working with a legacy system, essentially. Especially if you're like a computer programmer or, you know, if you, it's always easier to start with a blank slate, right? The old joke, how did God create the world in 7 days? Well, he wasn't working with a legacy system. He didn't have to figure out all of the nuances that had been established over decades that don't make any sense anymore, whether it's the birthright citizenship law or the healthcare situation. It's like somehow, and it's weird because it's almost always the Democrats who are doing this. And there's a phenomenon almost in which whatever the Democrats put into place just becomes permanent. And it's like unthinkable to even suggest that we could undo it at some point. That's what happened with the Supreme Court, or it wasn't the Supreme Court, but the state court decision today about immigration. And saying basically, well, you know, the Biden administration decided all of a sudden to create an app so people could circumvent the asylum system by clicking a button on their phone. And there's no precedent for him to be able to do that. There's nothing about this app that qualifies people for asylum. They literally just decided to not enforce the law they're obligated to enforce. And now we can't undo that. Now, apparently, because they did that once, it's just that's the case forever. Now, from here until evermore, anybody they came across is an asylum seeker and I guess a citizen, and anybody else who wants to come across can use that same app, and it's just that's the way it is. How about we go back and we just undo all of the bad things? It's not actually that complicated or hard to figure out how to do it, only the way this stuff is designed is to get us into these quagmires, is to get us into these circumstances where, okay, implementing this thing is easy and no one's going to really stop you because it's not affecting anybody personally. Right. It would take like for us to stop the CBP One app, we'd have to like file a case showing that the CBP One app was used to hurt us personally. And we'd have to have a dollar amount fixed to it. Like our system is not set up to deal with these things. What it's set up to do is implement these massive sweeping changes across all of society and then make it impossible to ever get back. They can implement it. No issues, no problems. It's just done. They just destroy the foundational identity of our country, the fact that we have borders. They just eradicate that. Nobody stops them. They do it with a wave of the hand. But if you want to undo that, it's impossible. Now you're talking about hurting people because, well, people came across here with the CBP One app. They would be the ones who were kicked out. So they are able to hire lawyers with money from NGOs or probably from the government themselves and argue, hey, this change in law hurts me personally. I need an injunction. And so they can implement this stuff with no barriers. To undo it is impossible. And this is ridiculous and a game they're playing. And I say we flip the board and do what we need to anyway, because we're trying to save the country and in effect the world here. So what are we waiting for? Well, we're waiting for Tiffany Cianci. Is she on? Have we connected with Tiffany? I understand we have. Tiffany Cianci is an activist raising awareness about the critical threat that private equity poses to American society. She's raising the alarm and putting pressure on private equity firms that are covertly monopolizing entire industries by using hostile takeovers and kangaroo courts. You can learn how to fight back by following her on X at The Vino Mom or by going to TiffanyCianci.com. But of course, she's here to talk about pesticides. You keep a lot of plates spinning in the air, Tiffany, and have your finger on a lot of pulses of what's going on. And it's all terrible. Everything happening to us is terrible. But we're happy to have you to explain it to us. Well, welcome to the show, Tiffany.
I apologize in advance. I'll try not to black pill any more than I absolutely have to.
Yeah, I don't know if you can black pill any more than I am at this point with the war in Iran and then everything else going on. But let's get right down to it. What has happened today? I know you have some exclusive information for us. Lay it out for us. What are you here to tell the people?
Today's been a really hard day for MAHA. There's been some good stuff and there's been some bad stuff. One, the state of Kentucky, the Modern Ag Alliance was trying to force through pesticide immunity there, as they have already done in Georgia and North Dakota and are trying to do in Tennessee, Missouri, and a dozen other states. They've been spending a ton of money buying people in the legislature, and they got pesticide immunity through 11 days ago, and then the governor vetoed it. He's like, absolutely not. You know, we here in Kentucky, are a state built on farmers, and our farmers, if they get injured, they need to be able to sue. Well, today, the Republican supermajority overrode the veto and granted pesticide immunity to Bayer Monsanto.
Whoa. All right. So they passed pesticide immunity, which is bad. We do not want pesticide immunity. We want Bayer Monsanto to be able to be sued by people who they give cancer to. So they passed the immunity bill. The governor actually vetoes it. That's surprising. Something good happening. And then they overrode that with it. That's how much they care about this. That's how much they're able to unify in the Republican Party for Kansas for this utterly damaging and horrible law. We can come together about something.
Party line vote. Yeah, it was all Republicans. Really disappointing. It's been relentless this entire legislative term, not just in the states, not just in the federal level. We've seen pesticide immunity popping up in every state that has significant numbers of farmers or farming as a significant point of GDP for them. And it's all been funded. I don't want to point out, Bayer Monsanto is a German company.
Right.
They're not Americans. This is a German company spending tens of millions of dollars to avoid tens of billions of dollars in liability for killing our farmers. And they are spending tens of millions of dollars this legislative session to save themselves tens of billions. Well, so today, one good thing that we did have happen is we had three groups that are MAHA aligned submit amicus briefs to the Supreme Court, asking the Supreme Court to not grant pesticide immunity at their oral arguments on April 27th. And Senator Cory Booker also had his staff submit an amicus brief saying that American farmers need to be able to have a private right of action to sue a company that knowingly withholds information or fails to provide information that they are prone to giving you cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, liver disease, kidney disease. Like, these are things that, first of all, glyphosate seems to be the pesticide that is primarily at the heart of these issues. Well, oftentimes our EPA has relied on a study they've cited that said that glyphosate was safe. That study has now been overturned by courts that found out that Bayer Monsanto and their allies funded that study and had their own sources ghostwrite it. Wow. So it's no longer valid. It's been vacated. Wow. But that's the study they're relying on to say, oh, we said it was safe, so nobody should be able to sue when we kill them.
And this is...
These are farmers. These are children.
This is a very common thing. Monsanto and Bayer, I mean, they've been discovered having, you know, black ops sections in their company that are there to intimidate journalists to stop them from... saying the truth about pesticides, allegedly, I should add. But, I mean, this has been written about for years. I mean, they spend a lot of money and they work very hard to make sure that this information is not available.
Correct. And, you know, when you see, aside from TikTok ban, I have never seen anything outside of funding our greatest ally that has ever cropped up over and over again in a legislative session like absolute cancer. Yep. Like a virus. We have defeated pesticide immunity literally a dozen times this legislative session. The American people have made it clear 98% of them do not support this. They don't want pesticide immunity granted to these companies because what company has ever needed immunity when they weren't doing anything wrong,
right?
We know that farmers are getting sick. We know these farmers are dying of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma at rates thousands of times higher than the next closest profession.
Yep.
We know it's not all the fresh air. We know it's not all the good food. It's their exposure to pesticides. We know that.
Of course. And some of the biggest decisions ever have come out of these cases about Roundup causing cancer. I mean, it's been proven over and over again. And you're right. It's just this relentless push and we have to constantly be fighting back. All they need to do is win once. We have to win every time. To fight this back. It's so ridiculous. And I mean, just the more you think about it, the more crazy it is, because obviously with any other product, you'd say, hey, you know what? If it's really dangerous and you can't sue, don't use the product. But you're not able to not use these products because of the genetic modification. So this is absolutely something that they need to be able to be sued for.
Yeah. You know, right now we have literally a 20 front war on this pesticide initiative, right? We have them fighting in every state in the United States. We have them fighting with multiple mechanisms, multiple weapons. They're trying to do it in state legislatures. They're trying to do it through, look what happened in Florida. They almost got through an anti-First Amendment bill that said, if you said anything bad about a pesticide, you could be held liable for defamation without cause.
Crazy.
Okay, that was very narrowly defeated, right? We have it going on in Tennessee, Missouri. We see it in Georgia. They've already gotten it through in Georgia and North Dakota. They're trying to do it in North Carolina right now. We narrowly defeated it in Wyoming, where it's finally dead. But now they're also doing it in bill after bill after bill at the federal level. We saw it in the appropriations bill in the Senate and the appropriations bill in the House. And now, just in the last couple of weeks, they've snuck it back into the farm bill.
No.
The same bill that President Trump just toted out at the White House, brought hundreds of farmers to show them how much he loves farmers and says that he is pushing for an immediate passage of this farm bill. Of course he is. Bayer Monsanto has given his administration $9.125 million. He has 19 Bayer Monsanto appointed officials in this administration right now, starting with his chief of staff, Susie Wiles, and going all the way down to the mailroom. Of course he is.
I'm sorry.
Why can't we pass a farm bill that's good for farmers instead of mega corporations?
I don't know. It really is utterly outrageous. And again, it's like, okay, farmers just not going to vote for Trump anymore. I mean, that's like almost impossible to ask too. And look, I'm not a big fan of Cory Booker. I'm a big fan of him putting an amicus brief before the Supreme Court to stop pesticide immunity. So it's like, Just add it to the list of things that Republicans should be the champions of. We should be the champions of farmers. We should be the champions of small businesses. We should not allow these big corporations that are globalist and totally anti-American to come in and literally kill our farmers with no recompense. I mean, unbelievably outrageous as always, as it continues to be. More with Tiffany Cianci on the other side. Follow her on X at TheVinoMom. Don't go anywhere.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it, I have for years. But here it is. scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62, that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this. That's where it put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishealstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishealstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishealstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue, and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvishealstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Folks, some interesting things are happening with the planned Artemis launch, the moon mission, now scheduled to launch right about now, right around now. Crew's keeping an eye on it, and they're like, well, they just changed the clock to 20 minutes. Well, now it's 10 minutes. Now we're looking at it 2 minutes. 2 minutes and 4 seconds. Artemis 2 launch, T minus 2 minutes. Of course, my guest is Tiffany Cianci. Tiffany, we're going to take a – how you feel about taking a minute here to celebrate America doing something that I'm not going to complain about. The American government able to do something. Who's going to complain about shooting a rocket to the moon? Somebody, I'm sure. But hey, we can still achieve great things, can't we, Tiff?
You know, I've spent the entire week watching viral videos about it being fireball season. So I'll take anything good in space right now. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know. I saw some people make statements today. I didn't realize there's an Australian senator who said that, you know, aliens are here, But of course, they're so many hours ahead. It was April 1st for them. So April Fool's Day, I guess, is confusing people. Let's keep the video up.
Gates,
all right. Yeah. We're going to pull up the site here so we can watch it launch in T-minus 1 minute and 4 seconds. So what are your thoughts on this, Tiffany? I mean, I feel like any other time period, there'd be a great, media focus on this. This is a big deal. I mean, we're going back to the moon for the first time in like 40 years or more. But it's like, I didn't even know it was happening until earlier today. This is just what happens, I guess.
I feel like this could have been such an opportunity for just unifying moment of American exceptionalism. And unfortunately, we've been doing so many things recently that have undermined generally the working class belief system in American exceptionalism and their ability to participate in that promise, that we've missed an opportunity here because of so many promises that have been broken. So I love the idea of taking a minute. I love the idea of seeing us go back to the moon. I wish we could have done it under better circumstances with more promise and more hope for everybody else.
30 seconds to launch. Looks like they're firing the engines now.
4, 3, 2.
Full screen, it guys.
Booster ignition and liftoff. The crew of Artemis II now bound for the moon. Humanity's next great voyage begins.
The vibrations are cutting the signal off from the cameras close by there.
Good roll pitch.
Okay.
Oh man, I would love.
Good roll pitch.
Well, I'd love to just see one of these.
Houston now controlling the flight of integrity on the Artemis II mission around the moon.
Well, I'm surprised we don't have a live view from inside the cockpit.
There was a cockpit view earlier. They're obviously not showing it now, but they were. You can see the big screens and everything. Yeah, it seems like we should be able to have an inside view. That is pretty incredible. What do you think? Well, if they actually live stream their entire trip to and around the moon, will people believe it, Tiffany? That's the answer. Do we have the ability to believe our government is capable of such things, or is this all a flat earth psyop by NASA? Tiffany, thoughts?
You know, honestly, if so many conspiracy theories hadn't been proven true this year, I could give you a solid answer on that.
Right. Right. Well, it's,
but I imagine we're going to give people lots of work to do, and we're going to see a whole lot of creators getting a lot of content out of this.
Yeah, hopefully so. Man, it really is an amazing sight. And, yeah. So far, so good. Knock on wood, but
I'm holding my breath. I have second grade trauma.
I know. I know. That's what I was, but usually, I don't even want to say it, but. So far, so good. We'll just say that.
I'm not saying it. You're not saying it.
They're approaching the
just
firmament.
See them get up there, and it's going to be great.
they're approaching the firmament. They're about to break through the ice wall and make their way back to Earth because space is fake, and we all know it. I'm not supposed to say that. Sorry, the crew's telling me I'm not supposed to say that.
We are not supposed to say that. I've been told that as well.
Booster separation expected at the 2-minute, 9-second mark.
Man.
So we're going to see boosters separate here. Why did the camera just move?
What a...
Confirmed separation.
Man, what an experience.
Why aren't we seeing the separation? Okay.
They didn't show the separation. That's the coolest part.
No, they pan the camera away.
We got to see a couple of big fat tourists instead.
Performance nominal, upper stage RCS ready.
Wow, so there you go.
What is that?
I think that was a shot from the actual shuttle itself.
Integrity, SM seemed like it. Complete.
Now I wonder, so obviously this is a NASA launch. I wonder if, how much SpaceX is involved. I wonder if those boosters are the self-landing boosters or if they're just going to get dumped in the ocean like the shuttle's system was.
Artemis boosters are really, really large. So I don't know if they're the re-land ones. I didn't know because they didn't really announce this was happening very well.
I know. That's the
thing.
I didn't
do any research to get ready for this.
Wow.
Okay. So that's moving. That's good. I think.
Wow. That looks incredible. Oh, and then it looks like another stage deployment there.
Uh-huh.
All right, folks. Okay. Well, there you just saw it live, the live launch of Artemis in the first moon mission since, I guess, the 70s, right?
That's what they tell us.
It's like, you're an expert on this, right, Tiffany? When was the last time when... Well, no, it's really, that is...
All I know is I've heard that they could call back on a landline live.
Right. Well, there is
weird.
Well, we'll see.
It seems really weird given the delays we know are likely from the moon. But that's what they told me. So here I am.
Dangerous thoughts you're having there. Okay. Okay. According to the White House, for the first time in over 50 years, America is going back to the moon. Artemis II, among the most powerful rockets ever built, is launching our brave astronauts farther into deep space than any human has ever gone. We are winning. Well, I guess we're winning the battle against gravity. Everything else not going so well for us. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's probably accurate. Okay, we'll take it. I'll take a win. A win is a win.
A win is a win. And hey, they're just proving that if things go bad here, maybe there is a way off this godforsaken planet once and for all. Maybe we'll all go live on the moon one day.
I am really surprised we don't have a cockpit image, though.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting.
That's very odd to me.
Well, we'll start the list.
We always have cockpit images from the SpaceX flights and from the Blue Origin flights.
True. I wonder if there's not broadcasting them, and if we'll see it a little bit later. Okay, well that was well worth it.
Yeah, maybe they'll release it later.
That was well worth it. That's very exciting, and it's good to see Americans come together. You know, I was talking to my father-in-law a long time ago. We were all sitting around and sort of talking about, like, if you had a time machine, where would you go back to? And his answer was, I wish I could have been a part of the space program, right? Because he was a little kid at the time, but the way he described, like, it's just thousands of people, the whole nation really, it felt like all came together, and all that energy and all that effort went into this one thing. And then there's this one little canister on top of this tower sized rocket. And it's just like, there's something beautiful about all this cooperation to do something, you know, brilliant and amazing. And, be nice to recapture some of that. It feels like we've lost everything about that, the cooperation, the cohesiveness, the reaching for the stars. I mean, all of that has been just degraded and destroyed over time. It'd be nice to recapture that feeling once again, Tiffany.
I can't agree with you more. You know, my big thing is bridging the divide. I preach constantly that we have 93% of our values in common with the people we think we have the least in common with. We have so much that should be uniting us right now. So much. And instead, we allow ourselves to be divided by a handful of billionaires that want to keep us where we are, not trusting one another, and for some reason, trusting them with everything.
No. It's
I'd much rather trust my neighbors.
Yeah, it's really inexplicable how they've pulled the wool over everybody's eyes. It's, you know what it is, right? You know the secret to how they pulled this off. It's the pink sweaters. Bill Gates put on a pink sweater, and suddenly nobody thinks he's up to no good. It's like crazy, but it legitimately is like Larry Fink and Bill Gates. They put on pink sweaters when they do, media appearances, and suddenly people think that they love us. They're just spraying particles in the air to block out the sun because they care so much about you. It's like, how did we ever fall for any of this crap?
Yeah, I feel like people are falling for less and less of it, though, and that gives us an opportunity for unity.
It does. And again, it's interesting that you have everything that you're describing. I mean, just the pesticide, the relentless push to legalize killing you with pesticides, I think is one way to put it. And on the same day, I guess this was from a week ago, the first day I saw it, 2026 Dirty Dozen produce, nearly 100% test positive for pesticides, including forever chemicals. Leafy greens such as spinach and perennial kid favorites such as strawberries and grapes held the highest level of potentially harmful pesticide residues based on government tests, according to the 2026 Shopper's Guide to Pesticides and Produce. Nectarines, peaches, cherries, apples, blackberries, pears, potatoes, and blueberries filled out this year's Dirty Dozen, the most pesticide-laden fruits and vegetables, according to the report released Tuesday by the Environmental Working Group, or EWG, a health advocacy organization. And of course, pesticides, they're not going to be removed with a little splash of water from your sink, right? I mean, these pesticides are extremely damaging. They know that they're damaging. And again, this is sort of the foreknowledge, you know, condemning thing about this is, if they didn't know that their product causes cancer, then they wouldn't fake the tests that you were describing about glyphosate being safe. So they did the same thing with atrazine. They knew atrazine would affect people's hormones. They knew it could, you know, affect wildlife everywhere. They deliberately went out and hid that information and lobbied the government to not have to provide that information. That is a guilty conscience. That's evidence of foreknowledge. What they're doing is not an accident. It's not a unfortunate side effect of just good business. They are literally deliberately doing things that hurt us. I think that's an important point that not everybody grasps.
You know, we saw the same thing with DuPont. And if anyone's seen the movie Dark Water, then we all know that DuPont did the same thing with Teflon. They knew it was killing the women on the line. It was causing birth defects. It was causing cancers. They were leaching it down into water supplies that were killing entire farms of cattle and then the farmers. And they knew. And they told the government it was safe, and they buried it in reports and thought they could ride it out long enough to avoid any liability. And we're just seeing the exact same playbook. Wash, rinse, repeat. You know, American farmers, they have it hard enough. American farmers, we're seeing American farms go out of business at a rate we've never seen before in American history. We are seeing generations of new farmers that know that there's no future refusing to pick up the shovel, genuinely. Yep. Because they know that right now, four companies, four international, non-American monopolies have consolidated all of the farming supply chain into a vertical that they control. And as long as they know what you're going to be paid for your crop, they can maximize extorting every single penny from you so that you never move ahead. Right now, farmers are making the equivalent of the exact same price they were getting in like 1986 for their crops. Their crops have gone down since the 90s.
And of course,
yet these companies are posting record profits.
Yeah.
These international, non-American companies that make their money off of the backs of the exceptionalism of our American farmers that serve American mouths, American children, American schools, Americans. And these international monopolies are exploiting them. They are extorting them. They are making sure that they never, ever can see its success. And then they're rolling up the farmland that does fail, buying it for pennies on the dollar and consolidating that into their verticals. And yep. Selling off the water rights to data centers.
Oh, my God.
It's vulgar.
That is a whole other can of worms, and I do want to get into that because that's extremely important right now because we still have a chance to stop this stuff from coming into fruition. They're trying to very quietly install these data centers everywhere, and it literally takes all of our water and the entire purpose of them. I mean, they're building prison camps, essentially. That's what's happening. So we got to get yep. to that. But when it comes to glyphosate and the pesticides – you know, what strikes me is that we have all of this new technology, AI and laser, and of course, I'm sure you've seen and we've played on here the, you know, examples of prototypes where you got a big machine that just scans plants and zaps each little. What they're doing by forcing pesticides and by demanding people use pesticides and by genetically engineering food so that it requires pesticides is they're preventing any sort of novel invention, any sort of change in operation that typically, like, this is how we arrive on a better technology, more efficient, you know, strategy is, hey, one thing we were doing isn't working so well. We got to come up with something new. But they're basically preventing that new thing from ever occurring by forcing pesticides to be the one thing that you can use to get rid of, you know, bugs and things that eat plants. So,
and they couldn't do it if American farmers didn't need farm bills and bailouts, and all of the subsidies that we're giving to American farmers are being lobbied for by these multinational conglomerates, these monopolies, and they're tying the subsidies we give our farmers to forced use of that money to buy pesticides.
Right.
Farmers don't want to use this money for pesticides. Farmers would love to do more organic farming. They would love to do more regenerative farming. They would love to take care of our soil and love to take care of our children with healthy food. And instead, to survive as a farm, these corporations have forced through their will, through our government, through lobbying, to make it so any money that we subsidize farmers with is tied directly to handing it back to them.
Yeah.
Either through their GMO seeds that are Roundup ready or the forced use of Roundup and glyphosate. You know, a huge percentage of glyphosate that's used in America is being force used as a desiccant. Yeah. If you don't know what that means, it means they spray it on wheat and it dries it out faster. You know how much time it saves? 3 days. 3 days. It saves 3 days.
Yes.
And because it's tied to forced use in subsidies, our farmers are spraying it on every grain of wheat that comes out of the ground in America. And that's why we have organic bread. right, like Dave's, that's supposed to be organic bread that's not filled with pesticides, that is the highest instance of glyphosate in a recent study of any bread brand.
Whoa. Now, explain that to people, because I remember learning this and like having to read it a couple times. You're like, there's no way I'm getting this right. Because we think pesticides, we think, okay, well, there's bugs or there's weeds that are destroy the crop, so you got to take care of them. This is after the crops have grown, after they've been harvested, they then desiccate it, which means drying out by using the pesticide. So it's total. I mean, is this necessary? I feel like I'm not, you know.
No, it's not.
I would think not.
It's not necessary at all. It would not be in use the way that it is were it not that these four corporations control our farmers by controlling every step and every penny they get. And they've forced it to a point where those 3 days matter enough that the subsidies force them to use this as a desiccant. And it creates a constant stream of income for Bayer Monsanto, in particular, their agricultural division, that also creates a constant stream of income for their ready GMO seeds that work best using it as a desiccant. And as a result, we end up with sick farmers and sick children and a sick population where we have out of control chronic disease and we refuse to do anything that actually fixes it. Because if we do anything that actually fixes it, it hurts a mega corporation that made record profits this year, bringing in $100 billion while our farmers went bankrupt at unprecedented rates. It's appalling.
It is. It's absolutely appalling. It's unnecessary. It's beyond thievery. I was going to say it's just naked thievery, but no, it's thievery, but the thief stabs you on his way out. I mean, they're actually hurting us. So it's not even just that the money is the big issue. It's the money on top of the widespread cancer that's obviously killing tons of farmers. It's just, this is so ridiculous. What can we do to fight back against this? Obviously, Cory Booker seems to be leading the charge on this. I mean, how legitimate do you think his push is? How likely do you think it is that this actually has a tangible effect?
Right now, I can say 98% of Americans support a private right of action to be able to sue when a pesticide injures a farmer or an American. Right. 98% of America wants this. Now, the only way we're going to push it through is if we can get bipartisan sponsorship. And the Farm Bill is going to be headed to the Senate very, very soon. We need co-sponsors in the Senate. We also have the No Glyphosate Immunity Act in the House that is co-sponsored by Ro Khanna, Thomas Massey, Representative Luna, and a host of others, right? So we have these two bills that can be reconciled on the cross. We also are calling on everybody to meet us in D.C. on April 27th. I'm going to be there. There's a whole bunch of creators that are going to be there. There's going to be a rally on the Supreme Court steps. We're all going to be speaking. We're all going to be calling all day long. But right now, in three states in America, as of today, in Kentucky, North Dakota, and Georgia, farmers that are dying because of Bayer Monsanto can no longer sue them. Without codifying this bill, this private right of action that Cory Booker introduced, they never will. But we can restore that capability in the federal courts by passing this bill that 98% of Americans support.
Yeah. And again, this is somewhere
don't
where...
Don't worry, though. We can get through a TikTok ban on 3 days' notice. Don't worry. We can get through funding for our allies on a day's notice. I would love to see us actually pass something for the American people. That would be great.
No, it's almost an inverted relationship between the desires of the American people and what the government is willing to do. Iran war, deeply unpopular. Everybody hates it. Doesn't matter. We're doing it anyway for as long as necessary to achieve whatever
the
hell.
Which, by the way, has increased fertilizer costs by 48% in the United States in 3 weeks at planting season. We're in planting season right now. And our farmers just saw a 48% increase. How much more can we ask them to bear?
It's an interesting choice of words. How much can we ask them to bear, Monsanto? But you're exactly right. I didn't even think about that. The fertilizer holdup is just another attack on farmers on top of everything else. I didn't even think about that in relation to the what's going on with Bayer Monsanto. Yeah, they're getting raked over the coals, absolutely, and it's these big multinational corporations that are getting bailed out. It really is despicable. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons not to vote for Republicans these days. Obviously, the Iran war is one of them. If the Democrats are a party saying, hey, we're going to get poison out of your food and water, might be a good reason to vote for him. We might actually, it might actually benefit us a little bit. And it's another place where Republicans should be the champions, but they have willingly abandoned the field for the Democrats to take it over. That's their fault. If they don't want people voting Democrat, then they should champion this stuff. Obviously, Thomas Massie is, and he's being kicked out of the GOP. So that's where we're at.
Yeah. I believe that this is a unifying issue. This should not be a partisan issue. There's nothing partisan about this. We want healthy children. We will not have an American population of children to be our next generation of excellence if we're making them all chronically sick. There is a reason they just increased the age for which you can serve in the military. It's because we have so many sick children that we won't have enough in the instance of a need for a draft to actually draft enough soldiers. So they've increased it to 42.
God,
we don't have enough qualifying children to send to war, so they've increased it because our kids are too sick. But by all means, let's give them some more glyphosate and let's ban their ability to sue the company that's killing our farmers and our kids. Totally fine.
And that's not even getting it.
We have to stand together.
And this is just like the most like apparent stuff where it's just like, okay, this guy used Roundup every day for 5 years and he got cancer in the place where he held the can or whatever. Like, you know, it's just like very obvious where it came from. But when you think about the other pesticides like atrazine and then the classic meme of, you know, they're turning the freaking frogs gay. I mean, there's subtle damage to humans that are being done, you know, that pesticides do to humans that you can't even really tell, you know, what effect it's having. It's just sort of after a couple generations, everybody's sick and stupid, and this is why. So like the danger of this is so much more even than just the cancer stuff. That's just the most apparent and horrifying effects, and that's what they're trying to conceal.
Correct. And there are many, many new pesticides. Right now, there was also a recent study that looked at how many of the required by law pesticides were actually labeling cancer risks on their bottles that were required by our EPA to put it there. And it was like 1.6%.
Well, they don't have
to follow the law. We don't enforce our laws against corporations. We only enforce them against everyday Americans, and it's exhausting.
It really is. So it's good to see Cory Booker doing this. I would love some Republicans to jump on this with him. What else can we do? We have about a minute left. Of course, people can follow my guest, Tiffany Cianci, at The Vino Mom on X. Her website is TiffanyCianci.com. In the last minute, what do people need to know about what's happening right now?
The answer is if you're in the D.C. metro area or you want to jump on a train on the Eastern Seaboard, come meet us on April 27th at the Supreme Court steps. We'll be there at 9 a.m. and all day long. You guys can be calling and contacting your senators, your representatives. We need to get co-sponsorship for both of these bills in the House and the Senate. We need to make it known in every state in the United States that you will not tolerate a state initiative. If you are in Tennessee, if you are in any of the Farm Belt states, you need to be contacting your legislators now and getting ahead of what they're trying to do to your children and your farmers because they're not for sale. You need to say that no on pesticide immunity, period.
I think April 27th needs to be the American version of what the Europeans have been doing. I think you need a bunch of farmers bringing tractors full of manure to drop on the steps of Congress. Maybe that will get through. April 27th, the big protest. We need this for the survival of our nation and our children. Thank you, Tiffany, so much.
So, CIA declassified documents last week. Operation Artichoke to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now, new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN's own website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out, sort of put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel, so good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So By the way, the new product, this was available right now at thealexandroy.com, is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexandroy.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexandroy.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best. And it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy. And they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at TheAlexShowStore.com. And I thank you for your support.